This is the Quality News Network. Iranian officials have denied UN nuclear inspectors access to an underground nuclear site they wanted to inspect. UN officials say that appears to be a violation of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. The move could seriously hurt international efforts to ensure Iran is not trying to make nuclear weapons. It's now Tuesday, August 22nd in Iran, the day President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad said he would reply to the Western incentives proposal aimed at halting Tehran's uranium enrichment program. In London today, 11 of the 22 suspects in the plot to blow up transatlantic jets were charged with conspiracy to commit murder. Authorities say they found martyrdom videos and bomb-making equipment, including chemicals and electrical components. In Miami, a federal judge has dismissed the main terror charge against Jose Padilla, the so-called dirty bomb suspect. He's pleaded not guilty to the two remaining counts of conspiring to support terrorists and will go on trial early next year. In Baghdad today, one U.S. soldier was killed in violence. And yesterday, two Marines and a soldier died in fighting in the Sunni-dominated Anbar province. Also in Baghdad, Saddam Hussein's second war crimes trial began today. This one centers around the genocide of the Kurds in the late 1980s. The judge entered a not guilty plea because the former dictator refused to enter a plea himself. In Afghanistan, four U.S. soldiers and more than 70 Taliban militants were killed over the weekend in the southern Kandahar province. President Bush says the U.S. will give Lebanon $230 million in humanitarian aid. He also asked other countries to provide troops so that the 15,000-strong international peacekeeping force could be deployed to the region quickly. The U.S. also plans to introduce another U.N. resolution to both spell out the force's rules of engagement and require that Hezbollah disarm. Italy's prime minister has offered to have his country lead the force. He spoke with UN Secretary General Kofi Annan, who will make the decision. And in Minnesota, former President Gerald Ford has reportedly been outfitted with a pacemaker. Earlier today, a Mayo Clinic spokesperson said Mr. Ford is in stable condition. He was admitted last week for testing and evaluation. In Moscow today, a homemade bomb exploded at a market, killing at least 10 and injuring dozens. You're listening to QNN.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. CollaborativeDivorce.tv.
Freddie Mac hopes to settle a class action lawsuit filed over its retirement benefits by paying more than $4 million without admitting any wrongdoing. The settlement still needs to be approved. Two AOL employees have been fired and another left after reports that internet search terms of more than 650,000 customers were made public. SanDisk has revealed a new digital music player with an 8-gigabyte storage capacity. That's about 2,000 songs, or twice as much as the iPod Nano, for the same price. The Treasury Department reports that interest rates on short-term Treasury bills fell to 4.97%. That's down from 4.98% the previous week. Home improvement chain Lowe's has reported an 11% jump in second quarter profit, but high energy prices and a slowing housing market could hurt overall outlook for the year. Alaska's attorney general has subpoenaed BP's documents on corrosion management. The state may try to recover revenues lost when BP shut down the Prudhoe Bay oil field because of pipeline corrosion. And a federal judge has overturned a $10 million verdict against a military contractor. The charges involved defrauding the government in the first months of the Iraq War. Light sweet crude settled at $72.45 today. And at the close of Wall Street, the Dow was down 36 points, NASDAQ down 16, S&P 500 down 5. You can hear more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Lord God, Billy Bob, did I miss you guys? What's more, I'm apparently allergic to Washington, D.C. Or Northern Virginia, or wherever the heck it was. Now, some sort of little bug. I don't know. I had one last week. I thought it was over. It came back. And starting yesterday, you know that feeling. That sliding in and out of the universe where you properly ought to be feeling. It's like being on a ship at sea, and the ship rocks back and forth and up and down. See, Agnes has it, too, and she's given me this dirty green look. But we're going to get through 3 hours of high-quality conversation radio tonight, I promise, because among other things, in the final hour of the program, I hope you'll be hanging around. Where else you got to go? Come on, please. we're going to be joined by one of my favorite former radio talkers and one of my favorite present congressional candidates. Yeah, that's right. We're going to be joined by none other than Tony Truppiano, running for Congress in, I believe, the 11th District of Michigan. And frankly, given the lay of the land, there's no reason Tony ought not win. All he needs is a little support. Because the goober he's running against, that's right, I said goober, is a Bush lick. And frankly, Bush has no coattails to speak of. This is another one of those Republican appeasers. And, listen to Tony, and then if you've got friends in Michigan, for God's sakes, in that district, if you've got the ability, help Tony. I know, it seems like it's one marching order after another, but among other things, Tony. Well, we'll talk about it. Tony has very specific plans for what happens immediately after he is sworn in to the Congress, and I like those plans. And you'll find Tony a very genial individual as well. He's one of up until recently, one of that tiny little bitty band of brothers known as Liberal Talkers. And what a wonderful show he had. And I'd rather see him in Congress, but barring that, can't wait for him to come back. Let's see. Oh, by the way, in case you weren't paying attention. All you dirty, long-haired, peanut butter in the back pocket, hacky sack play and peaceniks can go home now. Did you know that? Yeah. Dear Leader said, you can go home now. What do I mean? Well, Dear Leader had a press conference today. And he said, we're not leaving Iraq so long as I'm the president. That would be a huge mistake. Nah, doofus, huge mistakes are what you've been doing for the last 5 years. Yeah. 4 years. Yeah, this is just disgusting. Here's what it says. The strategy is to help the Iraqi people achieve the objectives and dreams, which is a democratic society. I know. That's the strategy. The tactics, now, either you say, yes, it's important to we stay there and get it done, or we leave. We're not leaving so long as I'm the president. That would be a huge mistake. It would send an unbelievably, you know, terrible signal to reformers across the region. It would say we've abandoned our desire to change the conditions that create terror.
Oh! I... Frazzle, lacking, black, staggin', blue nose, not full, frat,
it would say we've abandoned our desire to change the conditions that create terror. Has nobody told him that nobody's buying this anymore? I mean, Joe Scarborough, for God's sakes, is not buying this anymore. And him, a Bush Republican. You know, the guy, a few days ago, the guy spent his entire program on the topic, is Bush an idiot? And Joe Scarborough did not come down on the, oh, no, hell no side of things. Oh, no, no. He was kind of, yeah, he's a doofus. Of course, don't be fooled by Joe Scarborough. Joe Scarborough likes his job. Joe Scarborough likes his paycheck. Joe Scarborough likes being on Fox Light every night. And Joe Scarborough has stuck his finger in his mouth and then stuck his finger in the wind, and he sees which way the wind is blowing, and he knows that there's a whole lot of people going to go down with W. And his credibility is already sinking, and frankly, you know, he's reached the point of diminishing returns. It is not worth standing by George Bush to get the approval of a weird, cancerous little knot of about 20 to 30% of the American people. So that's why Joe Scarborough is doing that. But yes, the rats have their life rafts on, and the little rat band is playing. I got in the middle of one and forgot. What's the little rat band playing? What did they play on the deck of the Titanic? Waltzing Matilda? I don't know. But yeah, the little rat band's playing while the little Republican rats head for the rails. So don't make too much out of that. Now I want you to, you want to take a break first, then phones? Go with phones first. Okay, David is calling from Maine. Hey, David, welcome to the program. How are you?
Good evening, Bob. How are you?
I'm okay.
The first thing I want to mention is everybody, tonight is the Spike Lee documentary, When the Levees Broke. Part 1 and 2 tonight, part 3 and 4 tomorrow.
That's HBO, right?
Right.
Do you have the time?
I think it's 9 and 10. But, you know, another thing that people should probably, since they're listening on the internet, is you can probably download this or be able to stream it, even if you don't have HBO. I think this is going to be all over the place. Kind of like what I'm about to segue into.
Okay.
Kind of like the press briefing clip today for Bush and his. I don't know if you saw that snag that he did today.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. There isn't. There has nothing to do with the World Trade Center. You can just keep running that one over and over.
Over and over and
over. It's probably
over
on YouTube right now as we speak. And this is what I want. People should pay attention, because I said this last time, and I'm being totally serious. YouTube is your Fox News, people. It is. Whether you want to believe it or not, it is, because of the viewing numbers that it just goes. It's just astronomical. So that's your outlet right there, YouTube. It's better than Fox. It's better than MSNBC. Just put it on YouTube.
Right.
And see, before, a year ago, people were saying, "Well, we don't have any media options." It's so untrue, Bob. It's just so untrue. Everything is growing.
Well, pardon me for tooting my little trumpet, David, but yeah, we're one of those media options.
Right. Everything is growing exponentially at a rate that you can't predict. That's what I'm going to put out there. And speaking of someone trying to stop it, stop this. I don't know if you heard this. I heard this on the Tom Harmon bill that, on the Tom Harmon show that Ted Stevens is trying to push that bill extra hard, trying to rally up the troops for a vote on net neutrality.
That's my understanding. Yes, he's going hard at it.
Good Lord.
Enjoy it, everybody.
I hope he doesn't pass it through.
That's a series of tubes.
But I mean, if people do that, they're stupid.
But people aren't going to do that. That's the problem with government today, David. People aren't going to do that. This is a matter of what the corporations choose, because our Congress is up to its neck in filthy corporate money.
Well, if they decide to do that, that's when I get out the hacker books and I find a different line, be able to hack on a different system.
How to bust Ted Stevens' internet?
I mean, that's my bootleg internet. I mean, if it has to be that way, then it has to be that way. And this reminds me of how people are so gung ho about just basically everything a copyrights on the internet, which is just ridiculous. The more and more they try to stop it, the more and more sites. It's just so silly.
They fundamentally don't understand it. David Sirota had an excellent post that I caught over at Huffington Post the other day, David, in which he pointed out the responses of the old guard to the internets.
Right.
And these people really don't understand, because you've got, among other things, you've got statements from the DLC saying that when grassroots efforts are nullified, leaders can better represent their constituents. They don't get it.
But you know, Bob, I think it all stems back to one thing. I call it the great equalizer theory. Everything that they think that went wrong in their life, that one particular shining moment, that catalyst of a moment, I can redeem myself by righting the wrongs. And this is where everything just goes haywire, and these people constantly do it. From the left and the right, and from all parts. But this is what happens, is they take something and they say, if I change this, it'll all be better. And they don't realize by switching everything, you know, everything just becomes, the wires become crossed, literally. It's exactly what's happening with Iraq. It's exactly what's happening with Lebanon. It's what's happening with Israel. People think that if they can equalize it, and this is just,
there's a fundamental assumption there, David, that there is a balanced viewpoint to everything, and that is simply not true. Dr. Bill talks about this all the time. All viewpoints are not valid, and all theories are not valid, and all hypotheses leading to given conclusions are not valid. That's the purpose of intellectual testing.
Except in your own mind.
Well,
they're valid. They're valid in your own mind at the time. You know, I think they want to have it both ways. In that Ron Suskin article, they said, I'm reading Michio Kaku's Hyperspace. And this one got me thinking about it. But in the book, he talks about the fourth dimension and reality, and reality. And I guess you could call the faith-based community, which is what Hinton did, the fourth dimension. So you have reality-based, and they want to have it both ways, Bob. They want to have the reality.
Oh, sure they do. They want to say that there's no such thing as evolution, but the minute they've got the latest version of the flu, they by God want that evolved strain of flu vaccine.
They want to wear instead of us wearing the tinfoil helmets. They wear the titanium steel helmets, and they say, yes, but there's a reason, because the terrorists are coming.
Exactly.
And
they're a dangerous gang.
You know, speaking of just how stupid people are these days, is I saw a thing with George. I don't know if you saw this picture of George Allen, the latest thing that they dug up on George Allen.
Which one?
You're going to laugh at this. He's actually in a Confederate outfit.
No, he is not.
Yes, he is.
They did not catch a photo of George Allen in Butternut.
Yes, they did.
Oh, he is desperate. Because you got to understand, and you know, the rest of us just kind of looked on aghast, David, and said, Oh, Jesus. He called an American-born person of Indian descent Makaka and said, welcome to America. Oh, my God. And the, like, normal people, regular people, real people said, you know, that's just unacceptable. I mean, what's the, this guy doesn't need to be in the Senate. He needs to be in a booby hatch. But there is a whole bunch of old Virginia that plays really well to. So I guess the next thing you do if you want to really lock down that vote is after you've used a racist epithet like that, the next thing you do is you show up in a Confederate officer's uniform. Oh, my God.
But that was from a few years ago. I don't think he wanted that out there, obviously.
Oh, so it's a little older.
Yeah, but still, I mean, they'll just run that picture and.
But you know, this is another David. This is another one of those situations George Allen is. That's an onion because there's layer after layer after layer.
No,
this goober told the young man, "Welcome to America, welcome to the real Virginia."
Yeah.
George Allen's from California.
And then you had that other guy, Trump.
Oh, no. Don't spoil it yet. I got that.
Oh, you got that one.
I'm all over that one.
Do not
spoil Tram Hudson for everybody else. It's too good.
He's a black scholar. We have to listen to him.
You know, he's a native Alabamian just like me, and it's those moments.
Why do we even have to read Cornel West? We can just read Hudson.
Ah, yeah, sure. Oh, my God. Oh my God! No, I've got that for later on. And in fact, after the don't turn your stream off after the phone call's done. We're playing the audio.
Okay. Did you see the latest hypocrisy of the British government? Oh, it's just so good, Bob. They actually sealed the deal. People are in outrage over this, but they actually sealed the deal for 84 jet fighters to Saudi Arabia, and we're actually complaining about liquid bombs. I mean, give me a break. Yeah.
It makes your little head hurt, doesn't it, David?
No, all I can do is laugh. I don't really take it in stride. I just laugh at all of this. Because what? I realize that the right is so desperately to want to be in control of everything. They're squandering so much of what they had away.
It had. I mean, you call it squandering. I call it a natural progression because sooner or later, the lies come out, David.
Oh, exactly. I mean, you could see the lies. Bush didn't know which way to go today. It was like he was playing mental pong with himself.
Boop, boop.
I don't know.
Boop.
Or like the game Breakthrough where everything.
No. Oh no, man, you're getting too old school on me.
I know. But basically.
I prefer to think he was playing Asteroids.
Yeah, he could be playing Asteroids.
Well, you know, I mean that thing that in the box on his back, God only knows what that thing can receive. Like I said, there's every possibility one of these days they're going to turn that thing on. And he's going to say, "Clean up on aisle 4."
And you know I have to mention. Mr. Carr.
Oh, God.
Mr. Carr. What were those people thinking in Colorado to fly this person out and actually have him in first class dining on prawn and champagne? I mean, it's just too easy.
No, it's too easy to you and it's too easy to me, David, but please bear in mind we're dealing with the Democratic Party. I mean, I love my party. I really, really do,
right.
But fighting back is not our strong suit. Somebody ought to be following George Allen everywhere he goes, in a macaca suit.
I wouldn't be surprised if Carr knows Karl Rove.
Oh no, no, not in the least. I mean, these guys are networked. I mean, it it's like a crowbar. It takes a crowbar to get them loose.
I think and I guess the Wall Street Journal is looking stupid now. They were ratcheting up that fear mongering. August 22nd, something bad's gonna happen.
Well, here it is.
I mean, you know.
I mean, on that side of the world, it's August 22nd.
You know what's stupid about that? If I was a columnist, I would pick a day that was much later. So you could just have that much time to just like.
But see, that's the sad thing, Ahmadinejad. Played these ugly little cons for the fools that they are, David, because
you know, he didn't say, well, you know, on the 22nd, the hidden imam's going to pop out of her hat, and it's all going to be hummus and baba ganoush for everybody. No, he didn't do that. We're going to respond on August the 22nd.
Speaking of the Iranian president, or as I like to call him, Ron Silver, because I don't like saying his name, but
that's okay. Ron Silver has been signed to play him in the movie of the week biography.
I went to his blog today, and there's one comment, and I had to read it, and it said, "Mr. Mahmoudinejad," he goes, "Your text is too small, and I have trouble reading." I mean, come on.
I know. Hey, David, thanks so much, man.
All right, no problem, Bob.
Have a great evening, all right?
Later.
Get back to us on the Spike Lee documentary.
Okay.
All right, thanks.
Later.
Bye now. All right, quick break, then we come back. Yeah, I got audio for you. If I got audio, I got audio. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. I want to stop the war because I know the war will send too many children to an early grave. I'm trying to be less polite. I'm trying to be less polite. I'm fed up with the Christian wrong. Let the people marry. Tell me why are you so worried? Let me sing it to you in this song.
Should be free to enter into any kind of relationship they want to enter into.
People should be free to enter into the relationships that they choose.
I think different states are likely to come to different conclusions, and that's appropriate.
When it comes to conferring legal status on relationships, that is a matter left to the state.
I don't think there should necessarily be a federal policy in this area.
This message brought to you by Lynn and Dick Cheney.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Attention. Attention. The Playa Security Agency, a division of the Department of Welcome Homeland Security, brings you the following announcement. The current threat alert is seriously messed up.
Did you receive an email from the IRS saying you're due a tax refund? If so, don't open it. The IRS does not request personal information by email. Hello, I'm Russell George, Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration. The IRS and I want to warn you about bogus IRS emails and websites that look real but are not. These emails are schemes played by crooks who are out to steal your money and identity. Fall victim to it, and you can spend months, even years, cleaning up the mess they've made of your good name and credit record. Help stop these crooks from ripping people off. If you get a suspicious email, go to IRS.gov and search for identity theft to find out what to do. That's IRS.gov. Or call us at 1-800-366-4484. Again, that's 1-800-366-4484. 4484.
More than 1 million Americans have HIV and many don't even know it. With improved treatment and care, people are now living with HIV/AIDS. But this life-saving treatment never reaches people who don't know they're infected. Knowing your HIV status is the best way to help win the fight against AIDS. To find a testing site near you, visit www.hivtest.org.
She's still telling me what to do. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Just a one-finger victory salute.
Tommy, oh Tommy, when Tommy's overwhelmed, he eats potato chips and nothing, oh nothing, can overwhelm Tommy like politics. He doesn't understand how his marriage would deteriorate if gay people could marry instead of just cohabitate. Bush said cutting taxes was a benefit the poor, but if the rich keep all their money, then who pays for this war? So Tommy put down that salty snack. You've got the power and duty to fight back. Tommy, everyone gets disillusioned now and then, but if you eat chips instead of voting, then the Republicans have already won. A vote for anyone is a vote for Tommy.
Huh? 1:30 as we cruise through this first hour tonight of Head On, and I'm tickled to death to be back with you. I should tell you, we've got a heck of a lineup for you this week. Tomorrow evening, we will be joined by Loretta Knoll. She is a gubernatorial candidate in the state of Alabama. Wednesday night, we're going to be joined by John Sugg, who has written an absolutely brilliant article about Christian Reconstructionism. You need to be, you'll want to be around for this. And Thursday, we are going to be joined by Bishop Carlton Pearson, who has a new book coming out called God is Not a Christian. So I think you're going to be, pleased all week long. A whole lot of great conversation coming your way. At this point, however, our friend David in Maine mentioned Tram Hudson. That's Tram Hudson. That's Tram with two M's. Not Tram like what you ride up and down the mountain. No, that's one M. This is Tram with two Hudson. It's Tram with two M's, not two Hudsons. Tram Hudson, as he will tell you, is a native Alabamian. But what he happens to be doing right now, Tram Hudson, is he's running for Catherine, for the Republican nomination for Catherine Hudson's. Catherine Hudson's House of Representatives seat there in Florida, because, you know, of course, Catherine Harris vacated her seat so that she could go absolutely bug spray crazy and run for Senate. But this, you know, no, this I play, you know, I play. But this is such a stirring, stunning, bright light on it kind of example of just, the real Republican Party. I mean, my lovely wife, Agnes, does loads upon loads of laundry. I'm proud to say we have one of those washing machines that uses less water, so we're leaving a smaller footprint on the environment. But she does a lot of laundry, and a lot of that includes bed linens. Sheet after sheet after sheet, pillowcase after pillowcase after pillowcase, she washes. And I gotta tell you, I have never once caught her trying them on. Tram Hudson, however, I got a feeling that laundry day at Tram's house is just a real hoot with him prancing around the house in his finest percales. Sheet and pillowcase, baby. So he's talking to, Tram Hudson is talking to the Christian Coalition people. And Tram says that, I mean, there's no setup to this. This is what these people are. Play it, Agnes.
I was a commander of an infantry company, and we were practicing crossing a river. And, you know, an infantry company, 140 some odd soldiers, what have you, large number were black. I grew up in Alabama. I understand, or know this from my own experience, that blacks are not the greatest swimmers or may not even know how to swim. But we were crossing this. We want to make sure every soldier either could swim.
Did you get that? Let's do it again.
I was a commander of an infantry
company. No, he really says this.
We were practicing crossing a river. And, you know, an infantry company, 140 some odd soldiers, what have you, large number were black.
Yep.
I grew up in Alabama. I understand, or know this from my own experience, that blacks are not the greatest swimmers or may not even know how to swim. But we were crossing this. We want to make sure every soldier either could swim.
Okay, where do we want to go with this? You know, I grew up in Alabama, and I know from my own experience that black people aren't very good swimmers. I mean, take, for instance, Emmett Till. He couldn't swim worth a tinker's dam with that cotton gin fan wrapped around his neck. And all them chains.
And of course, well, no, I mean, you gotta understand, we've kept them out of the public pools for so long. This is,
That's awful.
Well, it's true, Agnes. I mean, I'm reading this at redstate.com, and apparently it's this apology site for Republican hate. And one of them says, well, you know, he probably just said it wrong, because what he was trying to say is that economic opportunities for blacks to learn how to swim in Alabama probably don't exist in the same proportion that they do in other places in the country. No, that is not what that means. I'm stunned. I mean, this is 2006. Emmett Till was 1955? 52? Now, granted, it was 1948 when Strom Thurmond said, we ain't letting them in the swimming pools with our little white children. I hate this. And we talk about hate and whether it's a destructive force. I think if you don't overtly hate this kind of thing, there's something wrong with you. This is intolerable. Now, maybe this guy just torpedoed his chance of being the Republican nominee in Florida, because apparently he was the front runner. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to offend anybody. But in 2006, what do you say? You know, and of course he came out and he apologized. Yeah, he did. He apologized. But what's he apologizing for? He's apologizing for being an overt racist, unreconstructed, sheet-wearing, clavern-attending, you know, grand exalted Sasquatch, whatever. Gee whiz. Let's go to the phones. Roy joins us from Texas. Hey, Roy, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
How are you?
Well, I'm doing good.
What you got for us tonight, Roy?
Well, I hope you got the piece that I sent you about the Republicans are not getting the fear factor sold.
Yeah, the Frank Rich column.
Yep.
Yeah, that was a nice piece of work.
That was. I thought it was very good.
And, you know, basically Frank Rich says that they don't get, you know, based on the poll numbers, George Bush is not going to be able to play the fear card anymore. The only thing that scares me out of what Frank Rich said is when we bear in mind, Roy, when we bear in mind that we are dealing with psychopaths, sociopaths, as our good friend Rick Goodner has pointed out.
Yeah.
When we realize that we're dealing with sociopaths, what this means is that the scare tactics that they've used thus far that are no longer working, this doesn't mean that they stop using the scare tactics, Roy.
Oh, no.
This means they do something even more horrible and even more heinous. And that should put an ice-cold sweat down the back of your neck.
Well, and we've seen and heard part of that today. Of course, I don't watch Bush, but listen to the press conference. Oh, he was playing the fear factor.
Oh, that's all they got. But the thing is, what's going to come next, Roy, is something. Look for it. September, early to mid-October, something god-awful to happen in the United States. And frankly, at this point, based on the 9/11 truth movement, I have no doubt that they will have orchestrated it.
I feel sure they will, too. But you know that this morning, the news conference, he repeated nothing but lies. And now, this afternoon, the different shows, Hardball for one, Wolf Blitzer, they have been playing what Cheney actually said or what someone else actually said. And why this guy thinks that he can just get up there and start rattling off and everybody just fall in line and believe everything he says.
Well, that's, I mean, he's behaving true to form, Roy. That's what he's had for the last 4 years.
That's right. That's right.
And I don't know, you know, I don't think the press is going to come all the way around and wear him out like he deserves. You know, yeah, it's so easy to forget because it's so long ago. Driving into D.C. This past week, I saw a bumper sticker on a car. Elegant, simple. All it said was, "I miss Bill."
Yeah.
And we have forgotten, you know, we've talked, oh, you know, the press is a bunch of lapdogs, the press is a bunch of poodles. Well, by God, when they smelled a whiff of sex, they were absolute manic attack machines.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, we can't get any traction for the story about Pickles taking off and leaving and heading to the big Washington highfalutin hotel, and because she was tired of him fooling around with Condi. We can't get traction on that. We can't get anybody to point out the fact that Condi made a Freudian slip of monumental proportions a year or so, 2 years ago, when she called the president her husband.
Yeah.
She said, my husband, or the president. And it would be easy, Roy, to say, well, you know, I mean, you know, she was thinking about her husband, and but she doesn't have a husband.
Right.
But yeah. You know, can we get any traction on that? No.
Nope.
I'm convinced. I am as convinced as I am. Well, of the fact that the sun's going to rise tomorrow, that there is an institutional bias built in here. Thou shalt not criticize a Bush.
Right. You're right. Well, I want to tell you a funny that I seen last week. I went to Lubbock, Texas to help my grandson move into Texas Tech.
Fine institution.
Freshman out there. And on a post on the corner of a prominent street, just before you get to Texas Tech, there was an old sign. It was bright. I mean, it hadn't been covered up. It hadn't been nailed on. It hadn't had anything. But it was an old Tony Sanchez for governor back when Bushy Boy ran against him in second term for Texas governor. That's been probably, what, 8 or so years ago?
Every bit of it. You would expect that sign to be pretty faded, wouldn't you?
You'd expect that sign to be long gone. But I believe somebody out there in Lubbock, Texas, thinks enough of that sign that, in other words, they feel like 70% of us normal people feel, not like the 30% of lapdogs and slow learners.
Now, be easy on the slow learners.
Well, that's what they are.
No, I know that the little cancer, what I call that little cancerous, not a Bush voters.
Yep.
No, that person's brought that out just kind of a, you know, hey, how's that Bush vote working out for you?
Yeah.
And we, you know, I was toddling around in D.C. and saw we got behind somebody with a Bush Cheney 04 sticker. And I said, look, a freak.
A few years ago, I was in New York, and I seen a bumper sticker up there, and it said, Clinton lied, nobody died. Bush lied, thousands died.
And it's the absolute truth. And of course, but if you can't ask that of a right one. Well, you just hate George Bush. Well, okay, but deal with the inquiry. Has he lied? Has he told any lies? Because I'm to the point where I will freely tell anybody who cares to ask that I loathe, detest, despise George W. Bush.
Right. It don't hurt me to tell them.
Nope.
I've got a bumper sticker that says George W. Bush is a punk-ass chump.
We need some of those. Of course, I had an impeach Bush sticker on the back of the vehicle, and somebody peeled it off.
Yeah, yeah.
They do, you know, they'll do that kind of thing, you know, because free speech is for everybody who loves George.
I'll have to send you the lady's name that you can order these punk-ass chump bumper stickers from.
Oh, I think that'd be fun. I have a feeling there's a bunch of people that would actually.
And of all things, she's from Austin, Texas.
Well, Austin's a civilized place, isn't it?
Right.
Exactly. Hey, Roy, good to talk to you.
Thanks a lot. I'll get that in the mail to you.
All right, you take care.
Goodbye.
Bye now. All right, quarter till, and let's. Do you want a break or okay? We'll take a break. We come back to your phone calls. This is the Head On Radio Network, and you know what? You guys make me feel better. I'm literally feeling better. This is where I'm supposed to be. I'm Bob Kincaid.
United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business, anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
I'm getting a catcher's mitt.
I'm getting ice skates.
I'm getting a jigsaw puzzle.
I'm getting dying coral reefs.
A blue bicycle.
A walkie-talkie. I'm getting a severe drought.
Cool block skateboard.
I'm getting melted ice caps.
A killer heat wave. A shrinking glacier. I'm getting a devastating flood.
Adults are generous. We're even giving kids global warming. But it's not too late. We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. Go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Howdy, this is Baxter Black, and if you're like me, you're concerned that the environment we enjoy today won't be around for our children and grandchildren. The Earth's resources are limited. Voluntary family planning improves health while helping slow population growth, and that's good for our planet. Help build a healthy future for us all. Visit www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
One way employers honor their most cherished workers is by allowing them the pleasure of meeting a quota. Because management is so smart and in touch, the quota is always a realistic goal that can be easily met. Selling 80 sets of encyclopedias this week? No problem. The worker loves his quota because he knows it's merely a target and not a big axe constantly looming over his head that'll determine if he's still employed or living in a cardboard box next month. When you exceed your quota, you're sure to be given a huge bonus. Your boss would not just use this as an excuse to raise your quota in a devilish game of how much work can we pile on Sheldon before he starts babbling and stains his chair again. Yes, the rewards are great and easily obtainable for meeting your quota.
Hey,
2.5 minutes before the hour. I'm Bob. You know, when I first went online, back when dinosaurs roamed the earth, you know, me and Adam and Eve riding church on the back of a dinosaur, I was an AOL guy. And later on, I was a telemarketer. And part of my job was being an extremely talented AOL hustler. There are little demons jumping up on bellows in hell waiting for me for that. Well, of course you want AOL. What, is there something wrong with you? Don't you want to be ahead of the curve? Don't be a moon calf. Don't be a fuddy-duddy. Don't be a jabber now. You don't want to be a jabber now, do you? You want AOL. did you see this today? The business about the stink with AOL's release of, oh, what was it? Let's see here. Yeah. 650,000 subscribers, internet search terms. Just whoops the baby. Fortunately, it's the internet and everyone's honest and nobody will use that for nefarious purposes. Oh, yes, they will. Oh, yes, they will. Let's go to the phones. Sarge joins us from Mississippi. Hey, Sarge, welcome to the program.
Hey, it's good to have you back, Bob.
It's good to be back, Sarge. I can't tell you.
Well, hey, look, I wanted to comment a little bit on this racism.
Mm-hmm.
There is a group that I think everybody, especially in the South, but it's all over the country, needs to be aware of. It's called the Council of Conservative Christians. And what it is nothing more than an offshoot of the KKK, and it is...
Well, Trent Lott's a member, isn't he?
Trent Lott and Haley Barbour both.
Yeah.
And in fact, a picture I run on my column a lot is a picture that I got off of their site. And I tell you, these people, they're worse than the KKK.
Well, yeah, because they've got nice haircuts and they don't wear the bed linens and they walk around in nice suits and they seem otherwise reasonable until you catch them. Well, you know, when they catch them talking about those people.
Yeah, and if you go too far into them, they'll start trying to kill you.
Yeah,
because I've already been warned not to go too far with them.
Well, you know, but you know, we can't live that way, Sarge. We got to do the right thing, don't we?
No, I refuse to back down. I'm kind of like John Elliott. I'm not going to back down.
Mm-mm.
You know, I'd rather, it's like I told someone in the chat today, I'd rather spend the rest of my life in some prison than to be a prisoner and be walking around this area free. Because
yeah.
I'm the same way. I'm still a prisoner.
Well, right. Once you give up your freedom, you don't need any bars.
Yeah. I just, you know, I don't understand this racism, but it's something that's so prevalent in the South, and I can't understand what people think the skin color has anything to do with how good a person is. It just, you know, it's stupid.
Yeah, it is. Well, it's ignorance. It's ignorance in the extreme, Sarge. And the thing is, it is so ingrained in Southern culture. You know, the origins of it. If you read Howard Zinn's People's History of the United States, you'll find out that the origins of Southern racism have to do with the Southern property class trying to keep the poor whites at the throats of the poor blacks because they were scared to death that both of them were going to rise up and have done with them.
Well, I tell you what, I remember when I was a little boy, and you've heard of Walter Payton, the NFL.
Oh, sure.
So, okay, he and I were playmates as children, and we were high school classmates.
Oh, my goodness.
And he and I used to get in my backyard with a bunch of others, and we'd play football, and it was black and white. Nobody cared about what color the other one was. And when it'd be really hot, we'd pile up in the back of my adopted father's truck, and we'd go down to the drugstore and go get some ice cream. Well, Walter and the other black guys had to go into this little closet-like, and it was hot, and you could tell it was just pure awful. And there I was sitting in the... in this cool air-conditioned area with spacious room and a table and all of this.
Yeah.
And I told my adopted father, I said, hey, how come Walter and them can't come in here? And boy, he told me, there's some questions you just don't ask, son. Now, don't never let me hear you ask that again. And that's how it was back in the 60s.
Yeah. Well, so, see, I started in the public school system after, and I mean a matter of a year or so, after the schools there in Florence, Alabama, had been integrated. And I got to say that the people there did a pretty good job because we never had any issues.
Well, you know, the first high school after freedom of choice and that was integrated by court order was Columbia High School here in Mississippi. And, of course, I had grown up with Walter and them, so I knew them. And none of us really thought much about it because we all kind of liked each other. All we could think about was, good God, are we going to have a football team?
Yeah.
But, you know, I wish we'd get to that kind of mentality. Where.
Well, I do, too. And the thing is, Sarge, we're going backwards.
Yeah, and this new form of racism, you can see it here in Mississippi, it's let's get rid of the public schools, let's cut education, let's take away the benefits, let's do everything we can to where only those people with money will progress.
Well, there's a movement inside the Southern Baptist Convention, Sarge, and it comes up at every one of their meetings where they try to pass a resolution calling on all members of the Southern Baptist Church to actively remove their children from the public schools.
That's sick. That is so sick. I hadn't been a Southern Baptist in several decades, and you couldn't get me back in that church even in a coffin. But I don't know, Bobby. We've got to change this stuff.
Well, you're down there. What would happen, honest to God, what would happen in Mississippi if somebody like this Tram Hudson in Florida came out and said and said what he said in Mississippi? Would it just be overlooked? I mean, is there any, I guess what I'm asking you, Sarge, is there any line that cannot be crossed there where racism is concerned?
Oh, no, there's no line. It's just the only thing that the people, the leadership here cares about is as long as you keep the trouble down. They just don't want any bad press. And that's about the only line.
Oh, Lord. I tell you, no, we're moving backwards, Sarge.
Okay, Bob, I'm going to let you go.
All right.
You
take care, Sarge. Have yourself a great evening, all right?
You too.
Thanks for calling. Bye now. You know, whether it's George Allen and Makaka or Tram Hudson and, well, you know, them black people don't swim too well. Who was it a few years ago? Some sports analyst person said, well, you know, of course black athletes are better than white athletes because this was said, I'm not making anything up, because they evolved running from lions and tigers in Africa. You see, the most insidious part of all this is it negates any individual accomplishment. It is the ultimate acceptable dehumanization in our society today. Well, you know, they behave, you know, because what it boils down to is, they all behave like that. All look alike to me. And these goons believe that. Walter Payton, to them, was not a great running back because he had tremendous skill. He was a great running back because he was black. And couldn't do anything else. That's the next thing you always hear. Well, yeah, that's all they can do. I mean, no wonder they're all in sports. It's not like they can get in college. I'm not saying this. You know, what Sarge says is true. The CCC, the Conservative Citizens Coalition, or whatever, they have pleasant little parties out on the veranda. And they chuckle amongst themselves, and they tell jokes involving a word beginning with the letter N. And it's how they are. George Wallace's son is a Republican today. In the current climate, George Wallace would be a Republican, and he would still be standing in the schoolhouse door. But here's the question. Will our party dare to stand up and say what is true, that the Republican Party is filled with perverts, child abusers, and overt racists? Nope. Now, that wouldn't be fair. That wouldn't be fair, because that's a broad generalization. We don't want to be like they are. We're not being like they are. We are speaking facts. Right? Right. So we're up against the top of the hour. Chime right in if you want to, 877-443-2366 when we come back. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. 11 of the 22 suspects in a plot to blow up jets over the Atlantic will appear in court tomorrow. Today, they were charged with conspiracy to commit murder. British authorities say they found bomb-making equipment, including chemicals and electrical components, and that the plot involved manufacturing explosives, not mixing chemicals together. In Iran, officials are expected to reply tomorrow on a Western incentives package aimed at halting its nuclear program. But Iran has until August 31st to stop enriching uranium before the UN Security Council takes action. In a speech on Iranian television today, the country's supreme leader, Ayatollah Al-Khamenei, vowed that Iran would continue its program. At the White House, President Bush said today that these are difficult times in Iraq and that the war will be a big issue for voters in November. Since the war began in 2003, approximately 26,000 U.S. service members have died. But regardless, Mr. Bush says troops will stay in Iraq until their mission is complete. In Miami today, a federal judge dismissed the main terror charge against suspected Al-Qaeda conspirator Jose Padilla. He's pleaded not guilty to the two remaining counts of conspiring to support terrorists. In South Lebanon today, Israeli troops shot up to three Hezbollah guerrillas following a confrontation. It's not known whether any of them were killed. Israeli warplanes also flew over Tripoli and Baalbek, the site of an Israeli commando raid 2 days ago. Tomorrow, the EU will discuss the troop deployments for the International Peacekeeping Force. So far, the only Western nations to commit troops are France and Italy. And Israeli officials say they don't want troops from Malaysia, Indonesia, and Bangladesh included because they are predominantly Islamic and Israel has no diplomatic relations with them. President Bush's approval rating now stands at 42%, the highest in 6 months. That's according to the latest USA Today Gallup poll, which also found 55% approve of the way he's handling terrorism. In California, a new bill signed into law today aims to make the Golden State one of the world's biggest producers of solar energy. It requires that 1 million solar panels be installed on various buildings by the year 2018, thereby reducing greenhouse gases by 3 million tons. In Minnesota, former President Gerald Ford has received a cardiac pacemaker. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network-quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to qualitynewsnetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
Verizon customers will soon be paying more for high-speed internet access. A notice sent out to subscribers says a new surcharge will be imposed for all new customers and on current customers with monthly plans. Freddie Mac hopes to settle a class action lawsuit filed over its retirement benefits by paying more than $4 million, but without admitting any wrongdoing. Two AOL employees have been fired and another has left. That follows reports that internet search terms of more than 650,000 customers were made public. The Treasury Department reports that interest rates on short-term Treasury bills fell to 4.97%. That's down from 4.98% the previous week. An SEC filing shows that the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation contributed some of the $350 million Media News Group used for its recent purchase of four newspapers from McClatchy, but the exact amount was not disclosed. Home improvement chain Lowe's has reported an 11% jump in second quarter profit, but the overall outlook for the year could be hurt by higher energy prices and a slowing housing market. Chilean miners are continuing their strike at the world's largest copper mine after rejecting a settlement offer. They went on strike on August 7th over a wage dispute. Light sweet crude settled today at $72.45. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow was down 36 points, NASDAQ down 16, S&P 500 down 5. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Let's do another hour. What do you say? For my part, you know, we started out the first hour, and I had the quote from Dear Leader about how he wasn't ever going to get out of Iraq and nobody couldn't make him nohow. Let's hear it in his own words. Is that okay? Agnes, can you do that for me, dear? Dear Leader? Well, I thought you... Oh, okay. Oh, I caught you all unawares.
To kill innocent life, who had relations with Zarqawi. Imagine what the world would be like with him in power.
The relations with Zarqawi?
The idea is to try to help change the Middle East. Now, look, part of the reason we went into Iraq was... The main reason we went into Iraq at the time was we thought he had weapons of mass destruction.
Ah.
Turns out he didn't, but he had the capacity to make weapons of mass destruction. But I also talked about the
program-related activities. Remember that?
And I also talked the need to advance a freedom agenda. And so my question, my answer to your question is that imagine a world in which Saddam Hussein was there, stirring up even more trouble in a part of the world that had so much resentment and so much hatred. That people came and killed 3,000 of our citizens.
Huh?
You know, I've heard this theory about, you know, everything was just fine until we arrived. And, you know, kind of
stir up
the hornet's nest theory. It just doesn't hold water as far as I'm concerned. The terrorists attacked us and killed 3,000 of our citizens before we started the freedom agenda in the Middle East.
The freedom agenda?
They were... What did Iraq have to do with what?
The attack on the World Trade Center.
Nothing. Except for it's part of, and nobody's ever suggested in this administration that Saddam Hussein ordered the attack. Iraq was a, Iraq, the lesson of September 11th is take threats before they fully materialize.
Huh?
Nobody's ever suggested that the attacks of September the 11th were ordered by Iraq. I have suggested, however, that resentment and the lack of hope create the breeding grounds for terrorists who are willing to use suiciders to kill to achieve an objective. I have made that case.
I'm going to have me a full-scale
and
fit.
One way to defeat that, defeat resentment.
Jesus!
Is with hope. And the best way to do hope is through a form of government. Now, I said going into...
Oh, my God.
Oh, Mother McCree. That's a full-bore meltdown. Poor Agnes, she doesn't feel good. This laughter could evolve into something really nasty really quick.
Oh, my God.
And they say liberals have no sense of humor.
I'm watching the video at the same time.
I mean, did you hear it? Did you, well, dang it. Did you catch it when the internal monologue got just a little bit squirrely? Yes, dear.
Please go to Crooks and Liars and take a look at it, because you actually have to see it in action to be able to laugh.
Oh, way to go, Agnes. Run the audience off.
I'm not.
Oh, God, I got to see that again. I got to hear that again.
One more time?
We'll use the pause button this time.
Okay.
And me without my blood pressure medicine.
Suiciders. To kill innocent life, who had relations with Zarqawi.
Oh, pause. Zarqawi? Zarqawi's dead.
Suiciders who had relations with Zarqawi.
What kind of relations there, George? For God's sakes, is this part of your anti-gay marriage agenda? Oh, go on, Agnes.
Imagine what the world would be like with him in power. The idea is to try to help change the Middle East. Now, look, part of the reason we went into Iraq the main reason we went into Iraq at the time was we thought he had weapons of mass destruction. It turns out he didn't, but he had the capacity to make weapons
of
mass destruction.
Okay, let's wait.
The reason we went into Iraq because we thought he had weapons of mass destruction, but he didn't, but he had the capacity to have them.
Is there anybody in America, short of Sean Hannity and Flush Flimball, who still believes that crap? I mean, that is this is the headline out of the British paper from last week. You know, the Bush administration is crap. Is there? Yeah, I guess there is. You know, that 20, 25, 30% little hardcore cancerous knot of Americans who would still vote for him.
He had the capacity to make.
Where was the capacity? I mean, what? I got the capacity. Well, no. I mean, apparently, according to the James Bond Homeland Security Department, some Kool-Aid and KY jelly will blow up a freaking airliner.
No, dear. The last time they had capability of weapons of mass destruction.
Not to say that we've got Kool-Aid and KY jelly or anything.
No, we don't.
That's just weird.
But the last time they had that capability, it was his father that sold them that capability, and I believe that Saddam
But we blew
used
that up.
It. I believe that Saddam used that on his own people.
Yeah, because he's an evil dictator who bombs his own, gases his own people.
Wasn't
you know, sometimes I do my George and I think I'm like one step away from Walter Brennan. What?
Wasn't there tanks and things falling apart?
He had the capacity to make weapons of mass destruction.
Talked about the human suffering in Iraq. And I also talked the need to advance a freedom agenda. And so my answer to your question is imagine a world.
Please. Because we need to address, advance a freedom agenda.
There's your new Karl Rove talking. We've got a freedom agenda in Iraq. No, we don't. If you pay attention, you saw an article, in the last 2, 3, 4 days, that said that the Bush administration has quietly informed Tony Blair's government that they're looking at alternatives to democracy.
That would be alternatives to democracy.
In other words, they're looking at advancing a non-freedom agenda. What alternative to democracy? You mean having a centralized government and a strong man enforce his will and compel everyone to behave nicely to each other, or he'll kill every last thing. You mean Saddam? Only Shiite instead of Sunni? Is that what we're talking about here? I do believe that it is what we're talking about here.
Yeah, but we need to advance a freedom agenda.
Because, I mean, when he says we need to advance a freedom agenda, what does that mean? That means, that phrase does not have democracy in it. I mean, how many years has it been, we're going to bring freedom and democracy and frisbees and wheat checks to Iraq? Go on, Agnes.
In which Saddam Hussein was there, stirring up even more trouble in a part of the world that had so much resentment and so much hatred that people came and killed 3,000 of our citizens. You know, I've heard this theory about, you know, everything was just fine until we arrived.
No, wait.
You
know, pause it, please. Do you know? Because the terrorists came and killed 3,000 of our citizens. And at this point, the Johnny-on-the-spot Washington White House press corps, who suddenly I understand a little bit better having been there. My God, how do people live there? I'm not trying to be mean to the area or anything, but my God, what a place to call home. But at that point, they're sitting there. If you'd had what in broadcasting television is called a two-shot, or a shot looking back at the audience, the reporter, the press corps, Every one of them is sitting there with their mouths hanging open after that statement like they're trying to catch flies. I mean, back the little green bar up just a smidgen, Agnes. A little smidgen more. There we go. Do it.
...of our citizens. You know, I've heard this theory about, you know, everything was just fine until we arrived. And, you know, kind of... stir up the hornet's nest theory.
One.
It just doesn't hold water as far as I'm concerned. The terrorists attacked us and killed 3,000 of our citizens.
Yeah, just in case you missed it the first
before
time.
Before we started the freedom agenda in the Middle East. They were...
Yeah, boy, I tell you what, you can't get anything past them.
Nothing. Except for it's part of... And nobody's ever suggested in this administration that Saddam Hussein ordered the attack. Iraq was a... The lesson of September 11th is take threats before they fully materialize.
Stop that.
Nobody...
You can't just let this language go roaring on by. And right. Yeah. Need another backup there, Agnes. We're going to parse this. Remember when they told us that Bill Clinton parsed words? Well, there's a reason. You got to parse George Bush. Try again.
The Saddam Hussein ordered the attack. Iraq was a Iraq. The lesson of September 11th is take threats before they fully materialize. Ken, nobody's ever suggested that the attacks of September the 11th were ordered by Iraq. I have suggested, however, that resentment and the lack of hope create the breeding grounds for terrorists who are willing to use suiciders to kill to achieve an objective. I have made that case. And one way to defeat...
No, he hasn't. No, he hasn't. He hasn't made it. Where did... I mean, are they just ripping off the peace movement now and trying to twist it for their own devious, sick, maniacal ends? It's about the hopelessness. Well, yeah, it is. Yeah, it is, doofus. It's about the hopelessness that's created when you ignore the Palestinians. Hopeless people are the only people on earth who strap dynamite to their bodies and get on buses to blow up other innocents. It is about the hopelessness, George. There's one for you. It's about the hopelessness of a father who has seen 14 members of his family killed. There's some hopelessness, George. And you see, the problem is, George, those people weren't killed by insurgents. I'm talking about the families you slaughtered with your little Tomahawk cruise missiles, George. I'm talking about war crimes. I'm talking about the deliberate targeting of civilians. Do you remember shock and awe? Do you remember how shock and awe began? Why, it was an attack. It was an attack on a neighborhood in Baghdad where they thought they had a hunch that maybe there was a possibility somehow that there might be a chance that Saddam Hussein was having a plate of falafel. And they killed mothers, and they killed fathers, and they killed children.
There are some who feel like that, you know, the conditions are such that they can attack us there. My answer is bring them on.
Yeah. Yeah. There's your hopelessness in the Middle East, George. There's your freedom agenda. Our agenda of advancing freedom. That really is a new one, isn't it? Haven't heard that one before.
I made my position clear about this war on terror. And by the way, the enemy made their position clear yet again when we were able to stop them.
Huh? Okay.
Let's continue on for the last, back it up just a hair, and let's continue on and finish this out and have done with it. It's like a train wreck.
Grounds for terrorists who are willing to use suiciders to kill to achieve an objective. I have made that case. And one way to defeat that, defeat resentment is with hope. And the best way to do hope is through a form of government. Now, I said going into...
The best way to give hope is with a form of government? Which form, George? Notice you're not saying democracy anymore. Can't help noticing that. I guess I'm just crazy. Yeah, we're advancing a freedom agenda. That's right. We got an agenda, and the agenda is freedom, and we're advancing it. The best way to defeat is to with hope. No, you see, resentment forms when you dig your little baby daughter out of the rubble of your mud hut, and you have to pick her legs up, and then you pick the rest of her up, George, after you've slammed into the house with one of your Tomahawk cruise missiles. That's it, George. George, you're a killer. You're a madman, George. You know, maybe we spent too much time talking about impeachment. There's another constitutional provision that calls for the removal of the president upon proof of disability. One wonders now, you know, now that the likes of Joe Scarborough have leapt off the Bush administration's little political Titanic. Now that that's happened, you gotta wonder how long before somebody on the other side will say, if at all, that the man is unfit to occupy the office. Yeah, I know. Well, that'd just mean President Cheney. I understand that. Him we impeach. George Bush is physically incapable of performing the duties of office. He always has been, but now it's getting a little obvious. Dear God. This is where we are. Anybody want to downplay the importance of the congressional elections on November 7th? Is there anybody on our side of the fight that's willing to say, oh, well, you know, ho-hum, you know, well, they might steal it with the election machines, reckon I'll stay home. Don't you dare. We gotta try. You cannot win if you do not play. These SOBs are monsters, and they will stop at nothing to perpetuate their will. He told us today he will not leave Iraq. What happens if there's a congressional resolution telling him to leave Iraq? Is he going to append a signing statement to it? Huh? This is stuff worth thinking about, isn't it? Is he debilitated? Can we finally say that he is physically and mentally unable to fulfill the duties of office and it's time to bring in the first runner-up? That's a joke. But it's not all very funny at all, is it? This is where you are. This is cold sweat in the middle of the nighttime because these animals are cornered. I mean, I've got an example of that. Agnes, dear, speaking of animals and calling people animals, I want you to hear what happens when you listen to right-wing hate talk too much. Found this over at WD40.com. This is, let me give you the setup. An officer has pulled over a vehicle for speeding and having an excessively loud stereo. I want you to hear the attitude of the driver. Go, Agnes.
Sir, you are being cited for speeding, which is the reason why I was stopping to begin with for going 55 and a 40. You're also going to be cited not moving for stereo loud, audible over 25 feet away. You need to just sign there for the speed, please.
You're a very shameful person to know that. You're a liar. I'm saying it just like this.
Okay, sir. You sign the citation, please.
Okay, you're a liar. Your thing about that's for kids who listen to rock and roll or listen to rap music. I was listening to Bill O'Reilly. Okay.
Bill O'Reilly doesn't fall under that statute?
No, I was trying to hear something. I wasn't trying to let everybody else hear my radio. I was trying to hear it myself.
Okay,
you're a shameful person.
Okay, sign the citation.
You're supposed to uphold the law and be an honest person, and you're not.
I'm protecting everybody else. You're speeding,
you're
and you have loud stereo.
Anything. You're a donut eater, and you will rot in hell. The line. You should be ashamed of yourself.
You have to sign the second one also.
You should be ashamed of yourself. But you're not, because you have the nature of a person, an animal. And the kind of animal I'm referring to, probably don't want to hear about, but I'm sorry you have to hear about it. It's a swine.
30 days to take care of both the citations. You have up to three options with the speed. One,
bless
you pay
that poor cop's heart.
Actually, you have a CDL. You only have two options. One, you pay it. It's $182.50, puts 3 points on your license, or two, you complete not guilty in court.
I'll get a lawyer.
Okay.
I'll fight.
Either pay it $73.50 or plead not guilty. Do you have any questions on that?
Why would I question a?
Sir, do you have any questions on the citation?
Like you.
Okay.
I will not question you.
Buckle up and slow down. Make sure you get your registration in the vehicle. Phone number 0655-825, Michael Conrad Forrester, citation 4152 EQH, speeding 55 and a 40, 4153 EQH, loud stereo.
Got that? You know, this is the culture that Bill O'Reilly is responsible for. It's not like I was listening to rock and roll or rap music like those disgusting dark people do. I was trying to listen to Bill O'Reilly, patriotic American. You, sir, are a donut eater and a swine. You're an animal. Now, a couple of things come to mind. One, if the driver had been black, he would have been out of the car and bleeding on the pavement, but we won't go there. Two, like I said, this is where right-wing hate speak takes us. The guy's been pulled over for speeding, and he is trying to broadcast Bill O'Reilly to a neighborhood in Tampa, St. Pete, I think. And he sits there and gives the cop down the road. I mean, frankly, if I'd been the cop, I would have thought that a tirade like that was enough. Come on, buddy, we're going to get out of the car and do the little test with the balloon, because I think you're loaded. Welcome to America. Welcome to Bushmerica. Welcome to a very, very incivil place. Welcome to a place where Ann Coulter gets on every single media outlet that she desires because she's good for ratings. She's outrageous. Hey, she's outrageous. The outrageous Ann Coulter will be joining us in about 5 minutes. Outrage is not a reason to put someone on broadcast media. We just do facts here. See, and outrage has its place. When you catch George Allen using racial slurs against a native-born American citizen, outrage is okay there. When you catch Tram Hudson bemoaning the inherent racial inability of black people to swim, outrage is okay there. But there's a difference between that and the filth that the likes of Ann Coulter and Laura Ingraham and Flesh Flimball and Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly and Michael Savage spew. And don't forget Don Imus. Spew on a daily basis. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the Head On Radio Network.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. Apple has found labor conditions at an iPod supplier in China to be unacceptable after a British paper broke a story accusing an Apple supplier of violating the company's code of conduct. Apple sent an audit team to look into the allegations. Apple reported that the audit team found that the supplier, Foxconn, complied with most areas of the code and has been taking steps to correct violations. One of those violations was employing workers at more than 60 hours a week, a third of the time, and at more than 6 days a week, 25% of the time. The International Confederation of Free Trade has criticized the report because it has not been independently verified. Apple only interviewed 100 employees out of the estimated 30,000 that put together the iPods. A public utility in Wisconsin is trying to become the first utility in the state to end defined benefit pensions. Doug Cunningham has the story.
Workers at MG&E, a state-regulated utility in Madison, Wisconsin, are fighting an all-too-familiar fight playing out nationwide. They're fighting in contract negotiations to keep their defined benefit pensions. Denny Dobson of IBEW Local 2304 says workers in their unions fought for years to win pensions, often giving up wage increases to earn them. Now this profitable utility is out to destroy pensions by replacing them with 401k plans for new workers. Dobson says workers are much better off with a secure retirement and a pension income they can count on.
A defined benefit is about the most guaranteed type of pension you can have. I mean, you can put 5, 10, 15, 20% into a 401k plan, but if the market falls out, all that money that you've put into it is gone.
Dobson says the fight to defend pensions can be won with solidarity.
Well, I'd say the biggest thing is that you have to stand together. You know, I mean, that's what unions are based off of. It's everybody standing together. Even the people that don't have a lot to lose, they still stand up with their brothers and make it all happen together.
The union representing workers at a handful of Starbucks shops in New York City has issued a call for the company to clean up. The Industrial Workers of the World released a list of 44 Starbucks stores in the Big Apple that have received notice of violation in their last inspection from the New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene over rodent, cockroach, or flying insect presence. In addition, the workers have filed a complaint with OSHA to address what they allege is an ongoing problem with vermin at three locations. Here is today's economic report. It isn't all doom and gloom for the 2005 U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics Workplace Fatality Report. Some categories reported improvements over 2004. For example, the number of fatal falls on the job was down 7% over a record high in 2004. Workplace fatalities involving women dropped 3% in 2005, hitting the lowest rate ever for the yearly report.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Just that born in space.
25 minutes and change before the hour. We're halfway done with tonight's program. Remember, we will be joined shortly after the top of the final hour, 9 p.m. on the East Coast, 6 p.m. on the West Coast, by our good friend Tony Trupiano. I think you'll enjoy the conversation. I'm going back to the phone in just a second, but I have received an email from a regular listener taking issue with whether or not Tram Hudson's statement was per se racist. And a reasonable case is made for it not being. Our writer says, the truth is, I don't think we can tell for sure if he is a racist from this statement. Here is why. The video clip is short, and I don't believe we have the full context of what he's saying. Second, he said in his experience that black can't swim or don't like to swim. It just might be true that in his experience blacks don't know or don't like how to swim. If you make a statement that is true, is it racist? I understand this point. I understand it very well. But this is a sort of, this is a creeping sort of racism. This is the sort of racism that says, oh, you know, it makes me sick to hear, because, see, I've heard them and I can't bring myself to repeat them. Because the racism lies in the generalization. To say that in my experience, most black people don't like or can't swim doesn't get you off the hook by saying, in my experience. It is the generalization that is racist. It is racist because it is a broad categorization about a group of people or individuals based on a perceived, rightly or wrongly, group dynamic. Now, as to context, I've got context for you. I've got it right here. Well, first of all, on this little weird right-wing site, one poster says, for crying out loud, no wonder the public perceives the GOP as being weak on issues of race. We don't perceive the GOP as weak on issues of race. We perceive the GOP as a bunch of racists. And then a little bit later, what he said was colossally stupid and an appeal to the misdeeds of Robert Byrd, is not because some fool had said, why is it that Senator Byrd spoke repeatedly about, you know. Because, you see, these goobers can't, I mean, and Bob Byrd is their whipping boy, because Bob Byrd was once in the Klan. 50 years ago, Bob Byrd was in the Klan. And has on many occasions repudiated his membership. But the point is, these people cannot deal with their own problems. But as far as the context is concerned, here's the transcript. 1984, we were in Panama. Now, bear in mind, this is a speech being given to the Christian Coalition. Oh, I've got you a Christian Coalition story for tonight, too. The former head of the Christian Coalition in Oregon has admitted to diddling members of his family. So this guy is at a Christian Coalition meeting. 1984, we were in Panama. Our unit was doing a two-week training down there. I commanded an infantry company, and we were practicing crossing a river. You know, this is where he's going to wave. This is called waving the bloody shirt, all right? It goes like this. I was in the military, therefore I am qualified to sit in Congress, which is a complete syllogistic bunch of hooey. One does not follow from the other. You know, an infantry company has 140-some-odd soldiers. A large number were black. I grew up in Alabama, and I understand, and I know this from my own experiences, that blacks aren't the best swimmers or may not even know how to swim. But we were crossing this and wanted to make sure every soldier could swim, and if they couldn't, we'd get them across the river. We had the line across the river, and we were making our passageway, and one of the black soldiers with his rucksack on his back, his weapon, and fell from the line. He let go, sunk down to the bottom of the river, and I've got to tell you, it took my breath away. You see, I'm trying here. His soldier, under his command, sunk to the bottom of the river, literally having his breath taken away. But you know, this guy can't think beyond himself. It took his breath away. Because, again, this is about not a, you know, why does he have to mention, you know, I think the guy is an unreconstructed racist. I grew up with these kind of people. Why is it necessary to mention the racial component of the group he was leading? Why is it necessary to mention... do you see what I'm saying? And I've got to tell you, it took my breath away. Two of the sergeants manning the boats immediately jumped into the river and pulled that soldier out from below. They gave him mouth-to-mouth resuscitations, and we called in a medevac helicopter to take him to the hospital. That soldier could have died. Now, wait for it. I believe it was divine intervention. Huh? That was a Saturday afternoon. Oh, okay. What? It was a divine intervention because it was Saturday? God doesn't usually work on Saturdays or do... What? Huh? And the next morning, we had a worship service among our NCOs and our officers, and I led that worship service, and I think in terms of answering your question, that if we allow... Okay, so this is a response to a question? And I think in terms of answering your question, that if we allow Congress or the federal government to remove that from the chaplain's corps, that would be just terrible. And I believe that being able to worship and to express our religious beliefs, if it's in the military, so be it. Or if it's alone as individuals, you would find me defending that. I'll just pass this around because this was manifold when I read about the law that someone was trying to pass. So the guy, okay, you get it now? The guy is answering a question about religion in the military. And in getting to religion in the military, he has to talk about how blacks aren't good swimmers. So, you know, I beg to differ and to a certain extent disagree with our friend Marcia. I think the guy is a racist because there is no reason to bring race into this discussion. For me, this goes in the same folder with Bill Bennett standing there saying, well, if you really want to eliminate crime in the country, you abort all the black babies. And then, you know, you see, this guy's trying to play the miracle card. And the miracle happens because blacks in the water are supposed to drown. And it's only a miracle that he didn't. You see? This is... I don't know how to make it any more clear. When you are willing to make broad generalizations, hey, Asians can't drive very well. All white men below the southern, below the Mason-Dixon line are bubbas. How many more can we come up with? How many more are there? In Rapigli world, they go straight for the gay generalizations. Bang, 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 bang. And I will not accept it. I will not countenance it. I won't teach it nor tolerate it from my kids. because you demean we're liberals, we're progressives. We believe that there is value in the individual. And when you are reduced to making generalizations, I mean, just as easily, I mean, this guy could have just as easily said, you know, some of this was the first time trying to cross a river for some of these fellas, and some of them couldn't even swim. And one of them let go of the rope and come nigh to drowning. But we saved him, and we medevaced him out. Now, do you see, it carries the same thing. So what's the necessity of mentioning race? I'm not saying that you can't mention race. Martin Luther King was not a white guy, and he would not have done what he did had he been a white guy, because he was not on the, because white people in that era were not on the outside looking in. But this, it falls under the broad category, you know, heading of, you know, the, well, again, I'm sorry. I mean, I'm a white Southern male south of the Mason-Dixon line. I guess I'm a Bubba. I guess that means that in my pickup truck, I've got to have a Confederate flag and a gun rack. Generalizations are usually a very, very solid means of determining someone's mindset. When you can look at the generalization and pull it out of context, and see if the statement has validity and meaning without the racial connotation. And in this case, it does, which means that this man brought race into it for a very specific purpose, because he was speaking to a bunch of pasty-faced, doughy white people in the Christian coalition. Now, he's since had people come out, African-American religious leaders come out, local members of the NAACP, and say, you know, we don't think he's a racist. Good. This is not an opinion contest. This is factual analysis, and not all positions are valid. Opinion doesn't matter. The question is what conclusion you come to based upon a rigorous examination of the facts. And I dare say I think my good friend Dr. Bill O'Brien might even deign to agree with me on that. Let's go to the phones. We're joined by our good friend Luke in Knoxville, Tennessee. Hey, Luke, welcome to the program.
Evening, Bob.
How are you?
Well, I'm worried. You know, it's 6 years, and they still haven't figured out how to get Chuckle Nuts' medication right.
No, I don't know if there's medication out there to get right, Luke.
Well, you just wonder, is it either they're not giving him enough or they're giving him too much? It's like, dear Lord, I mean...
Did you watch the video of...
Oh, they're showing it right now on C-SPAN, and I'm sitting there going... I wonder if maybe if that backpack, you know, the earpiece thing, I wonder if he's getting electric shocks from it or something.
Well,
you know,
I do. I mean, you're being a little bit facetious, of course, but
I mean, he acts like he's on. I mean, really on something. I mean, you know, it's like, guys, throw him down on the ground, put a stick between his teeth.
Yeah, lithium, quickly. IV.
Six pack.
Jeebus.
I mean, it's like saying that some of this parts of it, you got to wonder if it's sitting over at the side going, has anybody got the dart gun ready just in case?
Yeah, well, the video that we had here that we were running the audio off of, Luke, you know, when he gets to that little internal monologue, that little dispute with himself.
Well, you know, it's like I told you one time, I can't remember who it was, but we were talking about it. I said, I'm just waiting. He's going to start talking about himself in the third person like Bob Dole. You know, you know, George Bush doesn't think that should happen. No. You know, that's when it's time. Ooh. Like you say, it's time to get lithium and everything else we can find. Somebody get Dr. Nick up out of the ground. We need somebody here who knows how to medicate well.
You know, it's another one of those moments when I look up, Luke, and I say, you know, daggummit, I miss Hunter Thompson. Because he could have looked at that and said, I know exactly which cocktail of drugs he's on.
Well, the thing is, even Hunter probably would have looked at this and went, ooh, that's out there. You know,
I know.
He said, I'm sorry, that's just too crazy even for me. He just walked away.
Well, you know, they've abandoned, it's clear now. I read the story over the weekend about how they've quietly told the Blair people that they're examining alternatives, what they call alternatives to democracy. And then he's there today. And did you hear the word democracy?
It's like, well, it's like saying most of it, you're just kind of sitting there with your mouth open going, it's like, are you sure somebody hasn't substituted a different audio track?
Well, you know, I think they picked up an idea off Saddam and they've got George W. Bush body doubles.
That could be.
It's like that Michael Keaton movie about the clones where they just keep getting dumber.
Well, how did you like the article I sent you on Catherine Harris?
Oh, isn't she a piece? She's just a delightful piece of work.
But I mean, the guy had a look at it that I hadn't thought of before. The thing about Martha Mitchell, you know, said is she the new Martha Mitchell?
Yeah, that was kind of a blast from the past for me.
I ain't even thought of her in years. It's like you say, you're just wondering when they're going to start the whispering campaign. You know, the voice of the RNC is we got to get her out now. You know.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, what they've come to realize is that she stands a distinct possibility of literally, because, you know, she's a statewide candidate. She's a Senate candidate, Luke, and she stands a distinct possibility of dragging the entire GOP ticket down behind her.
Isn't that nice?
How nice.
It's one of those things. It's like we always say. I'm not a big NASCAR fan, but like I say, this is, I now understand a little bit about that thing about watching for the wrecks. You know, it's like watching Catherine Harris. It's like it's just a wreck in slow motion, and you're just sitting there going, what could she do next? And by golly, she surprises us. She finds something new, something that we hadn't thought of.
Well, and, you know, it's only because she abandoned her seat that we get Tram Hudson.
Oh, God. I mean, well, the thing of it is, not as much him, but the thing that gets me is on the thing on the Allen. Most of them haven't mentioned it. He's looking at a guy holding a camera. It's not like he's looking at the guy just standing there. This guy is holding the camera up, I assume, in his face.
Yeah.
It's like, George, they're recording you. You know,
well, you know,
like
you know,
but Fat Tony's things, you know, where they don't let anybody come in with recording equipment.
Well, you know about the new book, right?
Which one?
It's called Fifth Quarter, The Scrimmage of a Football Coach's Daughter.
Oh, God.
By the sister of George Allen.
Boy.
And she said she taught among other and apparently this book coming out has completely eclipsed the macaca business because he's a sick one. She says that she's scared of heights, Luke, because, quote, ever since my brother George held me over the railing at Niagara Falls, I have had a fear of heights.
Well, the thing of it is on some of this stuff with him, They're trying to say, oh, well, you know, on some of the Confederate stuff, they're going, oh, that's when he was a teenager. And they're going, he was doing this like when he got in his first office when he was elected. He had, like, the Confederate flag up on his wall.
Right, but some of these guys get away with it. It reminds me of Senator Jeffrey Beauregard Sessions down in Alabama.
Well, the one that always used to blow my mind, you know, we talk about the press and how far the press has fallen and come up and come down. I still remember Packwood. Now, there was a piece of work.
Oh, yeah.
Wouldn't report all the stuff that he was doing until after he got reelected.
Yeah. Hey, sweetie, come here.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, here's another nugget for you. This book is apparently a real barn burner. Referring to George's relationship with one of her boyfriends, quote, my brother George welcomed him by slamming a pool cue against his head. That's page 178. Then page 22, George hoped someday to become a dentist. George said he saw dentistry as a perfect profession, getting paid to make people suffer.
The only regret I have on all this is that this couldn't have been about a year from now and he was into the presidential campaign. You know, because you know that's where George's next ambition was. I was just sitting there thinking, oh, this would have been nice about 6 months away from the RNC when this hit. Oh, it would have just been so nice watching that part of the wing of the party just crumble.
Oh, that's okay. Bill Frist still has presidential ambitions, Luke.
Like I've said before, that's okay. I know a fellow whose wife passed away that he's waiting for Bill Frist.
Really?
Shiloh.
Yeah, no kidding.
But he's going to follow him around like an anchor.
A millstone, an albatross even.
Oh, but you know what I mean? It's like, say, this stuff today, you know, you're sitting there watching this stuff, and when you listen to what Chucklenut says, he's sitting there going, well, we ain't going to get out of there as long as I'm president. It's like, because he's going to hold it over and hand it off to the next president. It's like...
Well, that's part of the plan because, you know, there is, you know, the Republicans think they've already chosen our presidential nominee for us. They're convinced it's Hillary Clinton. And they think that they are, you know, they realize that John, because they will also stick the shiv in the back of John McCain.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, I mean, that's sport to them.
Well, you heard her talking. Well, I heard somebody talking tonight about it, said, you know, the thing that's going to be interesting I said about John McCain is that John McCain is one of the few Republicans who's come out and supported Mr. Schlesinger in Connecticut.
Yeah.
So that's going to get kind of interesting on that little...
Well, like I said, it's sport to them to slip the shiv in between McCain's ribs. So
that's
they plan...
on the plank, so we can push it. Go on.
Yeah, they plan to make this as messy and nasty as possible because they hope... Again, I try to play a little chess now and then, you know, I'm not one of those 12 moves ahead types. But I try to see what's coming next. And what's coming next is that if they can get Hillary into the Oval Office, they know that they can make it a nasty enough mess for her. They think she can't pull off cleaning up this mess. And so, therefore, the door is wide open in 2012 for...
Brother Jeb.
It's all out there. I mean, it's in the tea leaves. It's, you know, you can do the auguries, whatever. You know, that is the game. Jeb will not run in 08, but they have him ready to go in 12.
That's okay. Jeb has kids. I have faith in them.
Yeah, but it didn't keep him out of the governor's office. You know, Noel is an absolute junkie. I'm not being mean to the...
Oh, no.
But she didn't even want to get well. She was in rehab, and
Not in rehab.
Yeah, her fellow patients ratted her out and said, you know, we're trying to get clean here. And she's, you know, she's getting crack delivered in the pizza box.
You know, it's like, say, I heard somebody say it today. He said, yeah, if we want to protect the next generation, we should have all the Bush children sterilized. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I know that's an evil thing to say. I'm sorry. But
You gotta
wonder. The thing of it is, these are the respectable, quote-unquote, Bushes. You gotta wonder what Neil's kids are up to.
Marvin's.
Well, no, Neil's the real sleaze.
Well, sure. Just got that nice new contract.
You know.
Oh, I know.
I thought she came with the room, you know. I thought it was sort of like the mint on the pillow, you know.
Yeah, and the next thing you know, you're playing Frank Zappa's Why Does It Hurt When I Pee, you know. Luke, we got to roll, brother.
Bye, bud. You have a good evening.
You have a great Monday.
Bye.
Bye now. Oh, shame on me. I didn't mean to say that. It's news time. Let's see what the fine folks at QNN have for us this time. This is the Head On Radio Network. You know me, harmless little Bob Kincaid.
Thank you.
This is the Quality News Network. President Bush is calling on more countries to contribute troops to the International Peacekeeping Force so it can be sent quickly to southern Lebanon. The UN wants to deploy 3,500 troops to the region next week, but no European countries have made any significant pledges. Mr. Bush also said the U.S. would give Lebanon $230 million in humanitarian aid. Tomorrow, the European Union will discuss the deployments. So far, the only Western nations to commit troops are France and Italy. Italy's prime minister has offered to have his country lead the force. UN Secretary General Kofi Annan will make a final decision next week. In Jerusalem, a group of reservist soldiers is calling for the resignations of Prime Minister Ehud Olmert, his defense minister, and his army's chief of staff. That's in response to what they call a poorly conducted war in which they were sent into battle with little ammunition, food, water, and leadership. President Bush said today that these are difficult times in Iraq, but rejected calls to withdraw early. He also implied that national security and the nation's economy should be the top political issues in November's midterm elections. In Miami today, a federal judge dismissed the main terror charge against suspected Al-Qaeda conspirator Jose Padilla. He pleaded not guilty to the two remaining counts of conspiring to support terrorists and will go to trial early next year. He's been held in U.S. custody for more than 3 years. In Iraq today, one U.S. soldier was killed in Baghdad. Authorities also lifted a 3-day driving ban, which was imposed in preparation for a massive Shiite pilgrimage this weekend. However, 20 pilgrims were killed in sniper shootings. 11 of the 22 suspects in the plot to blow up jets over the Atlantic will appear in court tomorrow on conspiracy charges. British authorities say the plot involved manufacturing explosives, not mixing chemicals together as previously reported. In Iran, officials have denied UN nuclear inspectors access to an underground nuclear site they wanted to inspect. Iran is expected to reply tomorrow to a Western incentives package aimed at halting its nuclear program. But officials say the country won't abandon it. However, the UN Security Council has given the country until August 31st to stop enriching uranium and says it won't take action until then. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Business news is next.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
Morgan Stanley announced a deal today to purchase real estate investment trust Glenboro Realty in an $840 million cash deal. Freddie Mac hopes to settle a class action lawsuit filed over its retirement benefits by paying more than $4 million. The court still needs to approve the settlement. The Treasury Department reports that interest rates on short-term Treasury bills fell to 4.97%. That's down 4.98% the previous week. Verizon customers will soon be paying more for high-speed internet service. A notice sent out to subscribers says a new surcharge will be imposed for all new customers and on current customers with monthly plans. Two AOL employees have been fired and another has left. That follows reports that internet search terms of more than 650,000 customers were made public. The FTC is being called on to investigate. SanDisk has revealed a new digital music player with an 8-gigabyte storage capacity. That's about 2,000 songs, or twice as much as the iPod Nano, for the same price. Chilean miners have rejected a settlement offer from BHP Billiton. They'll continue their strike, which began August 7th, over a wage dispute. Light sweet crude settled today at $72.45. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow was down 36 points, NASDAQ down 16, S&P 500 down 5. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White. It's 5 minutes past the hour.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
4.5 minutes past the hour. I'm Bob. This is Head On. And as promised, we've got a great conversation coming your way right now, as a matter of fact. Tony Truppiano, like I said before, was until recently one of that small band of brothers that did liberal talk and tried to speak truth to power and truth to America. Tony, you've taken that fight a step further, and you're trying to take that fight for truth and decency and intellect and all the good things about that democracy offers to the halls of Congress, correct?
Well, we're trying, Bob. A pleasure to be with you this evening.
Oh, it's a real joy for me, Tony.
Well, all is well with the world. My Detroit Tigers are leading 7-1 in the bottom of the seventh against the Chicago White Sox. I'm running for Congress, and I'm on the Bob Kincaid Show. Tell me how life gets any better.
I don't think it does.
Thank you.
I don't think it does at all. You know, especially considering it's the hated, dreaded White Sox.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Tell me first of all, Tony, because I'm not that much of a I'm not that familiar with the layout in Michigan. Where is the 11th congressional district?
We are literally outside the city of Detroit by but a stone's throw, and we go from very blue collar Wayne County in Michigan to very upscale Oakland County, in a district that was gerrymandered by my opponent when he sat in the state house.
Now, Oakland County, is that Grosse Pointe Farms and all that?
Actually, no. That would be further south of where I'm at.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But it's in a very wealthy, as a matter of fact, I believe Oakland County, Bob, is the second or third wealthiest county in America.
Oh, one of those Bucks County, Pennsylvania type places.
You got it.
Okay, sure. I said that, you know, you were trying to take a lot of the issues that you had talked about on the air to the halls of Congress, but I don't think that's entirely fair, Tony. You're running for this is not some vanity run for Congress, is it?
If there's anybody running for vanity reasons, man, do they need some mental help. No, you don't do this out of vanity. You know, Bob, about a year ago, when the Downing Street minutes should have made national news and didn't.
Right.
John Conyers, Congressman John Conyers from the great state of Michigan, invited me to a town hall meeting at the law school at Wayne State University in downtown Detroit. It was on, I'll tell you the exact date, July 18th of 2005. That day planted the seed in my head for what I'm doing now. As we had a standing room only crowd on a very, very beautiful Saturday summer afternoon in Michigan, I looked around that room, and, you know, part of the dynamic that was going on, Bob, you'll remember Lila Lipscomb from Michael Moore's movie Fahrenheit 911.
Yes.
Well, she was part of the group that day. And before they started the festivities and all the speakers, they showed a movie. I don't remember who was making it, but they showed a trailer for a movie. And we'll remember the infamous scene from the press day dinner where George Bush is pretending like he's looking for weapons of mass destruction in the Oval Office.
It nauseates me to even contemplate it.
Well, most of the people in the audience were laughing when they showed that.
I remember.
I was sitting next to Lila Lipscomb at this town hall meeting when they were showing this trailer. And when that came up, she started to cry. And she grabbed my hand and she squeezed it hard, and, you know, I tried to comfort her the best I could. Bob, there's nothing funny about that.
No. When you do that kind of thing, I think you're sort of pulling the rubber Mission Impossible mask back and showing that you're evil.
Absolutely. And so that really planted the seed for me, and I thought, you know, and we do fine work. I mean, I think about the work that you do. Our friend Ben Birch, all the sacrifices that he's made with White Rose Society.
Yes.
Some of the other progressives that are out there, I mean true progressives, not people that are collecting a nice paycheck somewhere, but people that are doing the kind of yeoman's work that you and I have done, Bob. And I just began to wonder, could I make a bigger difference? Could I do something that would matter in a bigger way? I don't know that I get there come November 7th. I just don't have a crystal ball. I'm not psychic. I don't know these things.
But you've got to, as far as I can tell, reading the things that I can find about you, you are showing far more than many might have expected. I think, I mean, my guess is you've got a shot.
I do have a shot. I mean, you know, I have a legitimate shot. Our polling is good. Our ground operation is unequaled. I would put it up against any ground operation in the entire country. We've built a real grassroots campaign. We've got more volunteers than anybody in the state. We've got more of the district covered than any other congressional candidate, incumbent or otherwise. That's empowering. That's wonderful. It's not enough.
You know, that was where I was going, and that's the same. One of the things that I've beaten on a lot, Tony, is the absolute necessity, because you're living it. I mean, you've got your boots on the ground right now with it. One of the absolute necessities we are going to have to have if this nation is going to continue as a representative democracy, as the republic that it was intended to be, we've got to have meaningful campaign finance reform. And by that, I mean public financing of political campaigns.
Absolutely.
Because America, and, you know, I will even go so far as to say that the other side of the political aisle would benefit from having its own genius involved in the process, as opposed to a bunch of hand-picked political whores.
But listen, there's a little reality check in our discussion tonight, Mr. Kincaid. You said we were going to have a conversation. Indeed, we are. And part of that conversation is about the Democratic Party.
It may be a conversation, Tony. I think of it a lot of times in terms of an intervention.
Okay, fair enough.
I mean, this is I read a comment that on a blog somewhere today that there is a profound difference between progressives and liberals and real Democrats. And, you know, that just sort of made my eyes bug out and roll back in their heads. And if that's true, we've got to have that intervention, Tony.
Well, it's time, you know, and I guess, Bob, part of my frustration is, you know, what fight am I going to fight right now? You know, you do radio. There are certain causes that you're very passionate about, Bob. And as a radio show host, you can kind of carry that flame and you can bring it to different parts of the country. And, you know, there are different things when you can do with it as a candidate. You kind of have to find this, what is sometimes an uncomfortable balance between your own passion that burns inside of you and the reality of a congressional district that, you know, where you know that not everybody's going to agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not talking about, you know, of course, Bush made this phrase famous, the base, right?
Right.
I'm not talking about the base. The base is there with you. And I love the base.
Mm-hmm.
But it's those people in the middle that actually get progressives elected.
Yes.
And so you all of a sudden find yourself in a situation where, you know, you really have to stop and measure what it is the message that you want to deliver, because it has to be said in a way where somebody can't spin it against you. Now, that's not an impossible task, by the way.
No, but it takes a lot of skull sweat.
Okay, I'll agree with that.
I think you're capable of it.
And thank you, and I think that I'm doing it for the most part. But going back to this idea that, you know, we have, let me just say it the way it is. I don't know that Democrats are ready to lead. I know they're ready to complain. I know they're ready to get active. I know that they're ready to talk about things. I know that they're ready to get angry about stuff.
I think there's a lot of room to suggest, Tony, that you're correct, and I draw my concern about this out of the fact that this sort of lay in the tall weeds and wait for the Republicans to screw up and we'll get Congress by default attitude. That's not leadership, Tony.
Well, you don't win elections that way either. You're right. It's not leadership, Bob. And I, you know, I kind of tried to take a global view, you know, on a daily basis of what I'm trying to do. You know, one of the realities of what a candidate does, at least a good candidate, and I'd like to consider myself that. That's not my ego. It's my work ethic. I knock a lot of doors, Bob. I'm asking voters to vote for me.
Yes.
And I got to tell you, I've had some stories from the street that would just make a grown man cry.
And it's all, well, I can imagine the sum and substance of some of them, Tony. You're in a place that can, given the Ford numbers that came out, I'm guessing it's going to get a little scary where you are, and people are going to cry out for a leader.
Well, it is already scary, and I'm hoping that I'm beginning to hear that cry. It's not as strong as I want it to be, but I am beginning to hear it. And, Bob, I will tell you this, and you can save this piece of tape, and once I'm elected, you can have me back, and I won't deny it. I am the leader this congressional district is looking for.
Now, the incumbent is a Tad McCotter?
Thad.
See, I was going to say Thad, but I thought I would be making fun of him.
No, Thaddeus McCotter is his name.
Oh, dear. You know, every time I try to be nice.
All right, people want to... I shouldn't say that. Never mind. Yes, Thaddeus McCotter.
Yeah, well, I mean, I got to be honest. I mean, I follow Congress, okay, Tony? And I can spot a whole bunch of congressmen's names just, you know, and associate something with them. I've never heard of this guy.
Well, that's funny. The interesting thing is that he is a Tom DeLay-appointed assistant majority whip. And yet, even those within his own party don't know who he is.
Well, okay, so it's not just me not being on the ball.
No, you're okay, Bob. This one you're safe on, I promise.
Well, I mean, I wonder about hereditary habiliments in Congress. What is it out there that, besides the ordinary hard to unseat an incumbent business, what's this guy done for the 11th district?
Nothing. He's literally done nothing. I mean, his claim to fame is that his mother was I believe she was a city clerk in one of the larger, I think it is the largest city in my district. And so there's where a little name recognition helps. To my knowledge, he's never held a private job. He's never worked as a busboy. He's never worked in an office. He's never worked on an assembly line. He went from county commissioner to the state house to the state senate to the Congress.
So in other words, his leading... His leading claim to what qualification for Congress is that he knows which fork to use on the shrimp.
Yep, that would pretty much do it.
Well, where is he? Where now? Okay, let's not necessarily talk about him, Tony. Let's talk about Tony. Where are you on the war?
Well, I was against the war from the beginning, as many of us were. I do believe we need a timetable to pull out. I do think it needs to be a responsible timetable. I don't think we say, hey, next Wednesday we're gone. And part of the reason, and I anger people when I say this, but, you know, this isn't just about, it is very much about protecting our soldiers. There's no question about that. There are others that, you know, that we brought into this this war of deceit that have, you know, husbands and wives and sons and daughters serving, and we need to be very respectful of that. But, you know, Bob, the one thing that most people don't talk about as well are the innocent Iraqi civilians that have been massacred. You know, over the last 3 years.
Yeah, 100,000 and more.
It just blows my mind that, you know, it's obvious we're in the middle of a civil war. It's obvious things are not going well. It's obvious the people don't want us there. I mean, I could go on and on and on, and then I think it's fairly obvious that most of the soldiers would like to come home at this point. How can you, you know, Bush today, as I'm sure you heard,
yes,
says that, you know, I think the quote that he uses, Democrats don't understand the threat to the United States. Bob, I just had a son get out of the U.S. Navy.
Okay.
I understand the threat. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Well, but there's an element there, Tony, of talking down at the American people. I remember when, oh, God, what was the word? He came out and said, I can't remember the word now, but he came out and said that this is something, something. And then he mispronounced the word, and he said, and then he mispronounced the word again and patiently talked down to the press corps and said, and this word means this. You know, there's an elitism here, and it's present in Republican congressional seats where drawing your breath is a qualification for drawing your pay. I mentioned the word leadership a little bit ago, Tony. This nation is quite frankly aching for a leader.
Absolutely.
When you get there. What about an audit, and this came from one of the folks in the chat room, what about an audit of Republican financial schemes in Congress? What about a hard look at the rules violations that have been required in order to pass things like Medicare Part D? What about an analysis of and I'm sure you're familiar with it, the so-called Medicare Part D donut?
Yeah.
There's a lot of work to be done. How do you prioritize all that stuff, Tony?
Well, I think that and John Conyers, again, has talked eloquently about this. My campaign from the very beginning was about accountability. And I use that word in almost every speech I give multiple times. We desperately need accountability. I think part of being a leader and part of leading is making sure that there's a clear path to accountability. Bob, if I make a mistake, I should have to wear it. I have in my life.
Mm-hmm.
I've made mistakes. I have to live with them. So the first thing we need to do is let John Conyers, as the chair of the judiciary, begin the work that needs to be done. That's what we need to do, number one. We also need to start protecting the middle class in this country once again. They are vulnerable. They are weak. And we saw in the 2004 election, when all these quote-unquote NASCAR dads were voting for George Bush. Bob, you and I drive around town, right? And every now and then I'll see this piece of crap car.
Yeah.
With, W and 2004 or Bush Cheney.
Oh, Lord. Yes.
And, I want to pull up next to him and honk and roll down the window and go, dude, you think you got it right?
How's that Bush vote working for you?
Wow.
Yeah, and I see him especially here in West Virginia because it was God, Guns and Gays for 2004, and it was a pamphlet that the RNC sent out to Arkansas and West Virginia. Those are the only states they sent it to that said John Kerry is going to get your Bible.
And
so
what was it?
Yeah, I know. I mean, I don't think he needs stove wood, but it plays. For some reason or another, and it's one of those things that you've got to. I think you're going to have to deal with. I think you're going to have to deal with. I would assume that some part of the 11th has a significant Muslim population. Is that correct?
Certainly they do.
And those people are not being represented by Mr. McCotter.
They absolutely are not. And it's not just. We talk about God's gun and gaze. First of all, I'm a Christian. I'm probably a Christian. I don't back away from that. I might be one of those rare animals that's also a member of the NRA, but also a member of the ACLU. Go figure. I'm also one of those rare birds that believe that we should respect the rights of homosexuals in this country. But I'm also not stupid enough to think that we're ready for gay marriage, although I do believe that we're more than ready for civil unions. I know that's not the complete answer, but
I understand that. And frankly, the way I look at gay marriage, the Marriage Act, as opposed to the things that come with that come with the civil part of the process, marriage is a First Amendment issue, Tony. It's a freedom of religion issue.
It certainly is.
And if some church out there wants to start marrying gay people. That's none of my business, any more than it's my business whether someone anoints each other with oil on Sunday services. It's none of my business. And frankly, given the problems that we have in this country, universal health care. You mentioned the crushing of the middle class, ballooning federal deficit, outsourcing and offshoring. I'm guessing a federal examination of marriage is probably, we'll get to it, but it's not, job one.
Well, shame on us if that is a priority. Our priority should be reexamining the free trade agreements. Our priority should be trying to figure out why we're not insuring 48 million Americans as we pay more per capita for health care than anybody in the world, and yet we're the only industrialized country that doesn't have a single-payer health care system. I mean, these are just logical arguments that make no sense. And I would think, Bob, that we've got the perfect storm available to us. We've got a corporate environment that's tired of picking up America's health care costs. We have a population that is in sore need of preventive medicine, and we have a government that has a program called Medicare that was supposed to be the national model when it came out in 1964 that has proven to work.
Yes.
Isn't it time we just do this?
Well, I should think so, especially in light of the fact that what we spend in a month in Iraq, and I, you know, it bothered, you know, you asked, is the Democratic Party ready to lead? You know, are we ready to frame issues? Are we ready to let the DNC leadership sit down and just let George Lakoff talk to them for seven solid days until they get it? Are we ready to say to tell America, look, what we spend in 1 month in the war in Iraq, George Bush's war of choice, would fund universal health care for every single human being in this country? Can we have that debate? Can we have that dialogue?
We need to have, but see, yes, we not only can we, not only should we, but we need to do more than just have the discussion. Whether we're talking about health care, whether we're talking about trade, whether we're talking about lobby reform, whether we're talking about ethics reform, whether we're talking about campaign finance reform, we've done enough talking, Bob. It's time to start doing.
Well, yes. But we can't, but as the Congress is currently constituted, Tony, we can't even have the talk.
Well, you're right. The way they're currently constituted, we cannot. We cannot have the discussion at the federal level, but that's why the work that you're doing is critical to keeping that gas tank full. Bob, please, never, ever, 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 if I've not made my point yet, give up on the idea that you make a difference. I used to have a philosophy when I did my show. I was on the air for 12 years, and I used to tell my staff every day, if we help one person, we've done more than most people will today.
More than many people will do with an entire life, Tony.
With an entire life. I was just looking for one a day.
Yeah, and I share a lot of that. I mean, wasn't feeling so hot coming on the air. I get the sense, Tony, that with the Glenn Becks and the Savages and the Flushes and that crowd, it's shtick to them.
It is shtick.
This is not shtick. You know, we bill this as conversation radio, not talk radio. Because the dialogue is necessary. And, you know, we try to make that a point with every single program on this network. And you know, you reached out in those 12 years to people and tried to engage them. You know, I don't get a lot of right-wing callers, but they're welcome here. I don't want to scream at them like an O'Reilly does. I want to find out why it is they're thinking the way they are. I want to find out why that guy in the clunker car with the Bush Cheney 04 sticker. I want to find out why they got hoodooed into that. Because in a way, I feel sorry for them.
Yeah, I will never forget this during the 04 campaign. I had I would occasionally do these hours of open lines where it would just be pro-Bush, and I would just let people get on and do their thing, okay? I wouldn't be rude. I wouldn't interrupt. I wouldn't yell. I wouldn't try to fight with them. This lady called one day, Bob, and she said, well, I'm a Republican, and I'm going to vote for George Bush and Dick Cheney, and they've been great, and they have my values. And she just went on and on and on, and I said, well, you know, ma'am, I honor what you said, and I'm glad you feel that way, but I'm just kind of curious. Can you name an issue? Is there a particular piece of legislation? Is there, you know, something that the president and the vice president has done? And she goes, well, I'd have to ask my husband.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Well, I've got something here, Tony. This was in last week's Beckley, West Virginia newspaper on the letters to the editor section. And it's still out there, and it still has to be dealt with. And, I mean, I'm sure you already know what you're up against. Here's a quote. The Democratic Party has no moral conscience. They have no heart for those who have no voice. They believe that an innocent unborn child is allowed to be killed. Is this compassion? The Democratic Party supports federally funded racism in the form of affirmative action. I mean, this is talking points straight off the GOP website. And it's still out there. You know, I don't want to suppress anybody's free speech, but we have got to more effectively, and I think you're dealing with it probably in talking to folks in the 11th, we have got to more effectively address those concerns that have been, you know what, rolls downhill, and all this has rolled downhill from the RNC and Ken Melman.
You know, part of the challenge, because the Republicans and Melman and Karl Rove have done such a masterful job of dumbing us all down, not all of us, but they've done a good job with a great majority of us, is that when we tell them the truth, let's talk about affirmative action a moment. One of the things that people don't understand is if we were to eliminate affirmative action in this country, there are certain medical tests that women wouldn't be able to get anymore. You say, well, how can that be? Well, I mean, there would be, you know, there are certain, like a mammogram.
Yeah.
You know, if we were to eliminate affirmative action, access to certain healthcare procedures like mammograms would not be as readily available. We would not see as many women working in medicine as we do without affirmative action. Just ask a woman. Ask your wife right now, Bob, how comfortable she feels going to. Now, many women don't have a problem going to a male gynecologist. Many women do.
She won't. I can tell you right now, we've been down this road.
If we eliminate affirmative action, all of a sudden our health care changes.
Yeah.
This isn't, and people always think, and let's just be honest about it, people always think affirmative action is about blacks.
Sure.
It's not. It's not just about blacks. It's about women. It's about other minorities. It's about a lot of people.
And frankly, if we're
together, they'd probably be in the majority.
And if we're going to talk about eliminating affirmative action, I would like at least just a little bit of honesty in that discussion, Tony, because the affirmative action I'd like to get rid of is the affirmative action that lets C students get into Yale because their daddy and granddaddy were there.
Thank you very much. I get very passionate about these kinds of issues because I still live in a world, I don't know about where you live, but I still live in a world where the color of your skin, the size of your waist, the shape of your eyes, the kind of hair you have is a direct reflection on how you do in life.
Yeah. This is a very lily white state, West Virginia, Tony. And that counts for a lot.
You know, yesterday I spent a couple well spent hours at something in my district called India Day. And yesterday, this past week, India celebrated their 59th Independence Day.
Yes.
And so they had this wonderful celebration, about 20,000 Indian Americans gathered at this beautiful, beautiful place. And I learned a lot about their culture and a lot about their traditions. And it was just an amazing afternoon. I'm so glad I did it. It wasn't like I was even considering not going, but I had no idea what to expect.
Right.
Being the good candidate, I went. I can't tell you how valuable that was to me.
Yes, and not on some stereotypical basis, but on some basis of actually coming into contact with some profoundly American people. I mean, I got to wonder if at this discussion did they talk about George Allen's little comment? I can't imagine that the Indian community in America is not just up in arms over that kind of overt racism that
Well, I will tell you, it didn't come up in the events that I was involved in yesterday, but they were very ceremonial, and so it wouldn't have been appropriate. But even as I walked around the exhibit hall, people were very interested. This will come as no surprise to you. They were very interested in my thoughts on peace, the peace process.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a big, of course, supporter of peace, and I do believe we need to have the Kucinich Department of Peace. I believe that. I think that we too easily give up. I believe in a strong military, don't get me wrong. I believe in protecting our borders, very much so. But I also believe that there's something to be said about the dialogue that gets us closer to coexisting.
Well, I don't think we have a choice, do we?
Well, apparently we do, because we're not doing what you and I are talking about. And again, this is something that both Democrats and Republicans need to wear.
Well, you said Democrats and Republicans. The Republican Party, though, Tony, has two components on the immigration issue. There's the gang that wants the free labor, and there's the gang that is, frankly, I used the phrase earlier in the program, unreconstructed racists. George Bush calls Hispanics guest workers. I've never treated a guest the way these people are treated. You know, no workers' comp, no meaningful. You know, his guest worker program, Tony, says that, you know, if they try to form a union, they're back on the train to the border.
Yeah, let me remind your audience of some very famous words. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to be free.
Emma Lazarus.
And
it's no less valid today than it was.
I want people to legally live in my community. I want them to equally participate in all the bounty that we have. I want them to come from all corners of the universe to celebrate the kind of freedom that you and I cherish, Bob.
And
I want it to be done right.
Yeah, and among other things, you want them to contribute to that society.
Absolutely.
I mean, we're told that, you know, we've got a Social Security crisis. And at the same time, you've got somebody that wants to run 11 million workers out of the country instead of bringing them into that process, bringing them into the Social Security retirement system, at which point, you know, boom. You got a problem with the baby boomers? They don't.
I'm telling you, what they need to do is turn all this whole problem over to organized labor. They'll have these folks organized, they'll have them on a payment plan, and they'll have them paying off those fines in no time, and we'll have more people contributing to those tax rolls than we ever thought possible.
Well, I suppose it's a no-brainer to say to you, Tony, that upon being sworn in, you will have no problem signing on to the Employees Free Choice Act.
Of course.
You know, the AFL-CIO numbers say that more than two-thirds of the country would join a union if only they could without fear of losing their job. That's what the Employees Free Choice Act allows to happen. Tony, I've got someone online here. I'm not sure if technologically it's going to work, but Alice is with us, and I'd like to see if we can bring her on. Would that be all right?
That would be lovely.
Okay. Alice, stand by for just a second. We'll get you going here. All right, are you there, Alice?
Yes.
Wonderful. Alice, this is Tony. Tony, Alice.
I know Alice.
Oh, wonderful.
How are you, Alice?
Well, I'm I'm here.
Well, it's nice to talk to you. It's been almost a year since you and I have had a chance to talk.
Oh, Tony. You are so great.
Well, I appreciate that.
Oh, I was just going to give you a... I'm almost 93 years old. Well, not quite, but and I think that Tony, we used to be we listened to you every day, and you're a very good man.
Well, Alice, I appreciate that.
I can vouch for that.
Well, I appreciate that. Bob, Alice, as she is a regular listener to your show, she was a regular contributor to my show as well, and I miss her dearly.
Well, Alice, thank you so much. It's so nice
to
have you call in.
A lot of good luck. I'll hold a good thought for you.
Thank you, Alice.
Okay.
Thank you kindly, Alice. I hope we'll hear from you again.
Okay.
Bye now.
Bye.
Tony, let's get to the core of one of the uglier parts of campaigning for office. You have a money mountain to climb, and you've done an amazing job from what I understand so far. But the battle is far from over. I mean, you're playing in a field that is anything but level.
I'm just going to say this in the only way I know how to say it. I need money. And I need them in $5 bills and $20 bills and whatever people can do. it's a huge mountain to climb. You know, there's a certain, you know, gift of incumbency. It's much easier to raise money when you're already in office. I, for all intents and purposes, I guess, was a no-name candidate, although I had some name recognition because of the show.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a... Bob, if I told you the amount of hours that I spend every week calling people asking for money, you'd wonder why anybody does what I'm doing right now.
Oh, I don't doubt it at all. I think that goes back to the discussion we had about the necessity for changing the financing of campaigns in this country. But, you know, you're not, I mean, let's be honest, you're not just crawling up a hill against the power of incumbency. You're having a hard time getting the mainstream Democrats machine on your team.
Well, I'm a progressive, and being a progressive or a liberal, whatever you want to call it, has its own challenges. Now, I don't back away from who I am, Bob. That would, of course, get me in trouble with my God, my family, my community. I am who I am. But unfortunately, there are many within our Democratic Party that just don't believe people like me belong on Capitol Hill.
Well, what kind of people like you? I mean, I'm not trying to be simple here, but why wouldn't you be, I mean, you're a Democrat. You add to the possible majority.
I could, throw a couple suggestions out there. I'm an independent thinker. I may not go along with the party every single time. I may be a little more difficult to handle than some of the more predictable members that may get elected that are Democrats. I'm looking to lead. I'm not looking to belong. I could go on.
Okay. That makes perfectly good sense. Where money is concerned, when Tony gets to Congress, what's Tony's position going to be on PAC money?
Well, part of campaign finance reform must include strict limits, and there already are fairly strict limits on PAC money, by the way. I think we need to make some tough choices, and if we're going to truly reform campaign finance, then we need to say if it's publicly financed, it's publicly financed, period.
And that would seem to take a whole lot of money out of the process.
Absolutely.
Well, let me take you somewhere that you may not have gone lately or ever. One of the things that we talk about on this program is corporate personhood. Have you given any thought to that at all?
Corporate what?
Personhood. The Supreme Court says that a corporation, which by definition is virtually immortal, has the same rights as you or I under the Constitution of the United States. And the reason that we can't get meaningful campaign finance reform through is because Great Big Corporation of America has the same free speech rights as you and I. Would you be willing to entertain at least an examination of that corporate personhood?
Yeah, I don't know a lot about it. I'm not going to sit here and
sure.
try to wax eloquently on something that I'm not fully aware of. But just, it kind of rubbed me the wrong way, just as you were describing it.
Corporations
are not immortal. They are not persons.
Well,
and if they are, then I want the same gifts they get.
Right. But the fact of the matter is, if you're a huge corporation, you can make donations just of ungodly quantity and quality. But you and I, we A, don't have that money, and B, there are very strict laws out there relating to what individuals can do.
Absolutely. Well, Bob, I want to make this very clear. I'm a capitalist.
Yeah, sure.
I would love for everybody to be wealthy. I really would. I think it'd be great if we were all wealthy. I also recognize that some people just are lazy. There are lots of reasons why people aren't wealthy. Some of it isn't always your lot in life. Some of it's just plain lazy.
Yeah, or...
I know a lot of wealthy people, actually, that are pretty lazy now that I come to think of it, Bob.
Anna Nicole Smith, Paris Hilton.
All right, and we could go on.
Yeah.
So, my point here being, I have no problem with corporate America thriving. It's what drives our economy. It drives a lot of... I have no problem with that at all. But they shouldn't be given any kind of special consideration because they can write a certain amount of money to a certain... member of this or that that controls this or that. The system is so dysfunctional, Bob. My God.
Makes you ache, doesn't it?
You know, there are days where I just shake my head and I say to myself, you know, the deeper we get into this, we're only 78 days away from the election.
Right.
The deeper I get into this, the more I learn. The more I learn, the more empowered I am to continue this. You know, someone said to me the other day, I was making a passionate appeal to a group that I needed some help with. I needed them to help me knock doors. I needed them to help me raise money. Somebody came up to me afterwards and said, you know, you almost sounded borderline desperate. And there was somebody standing next to him, and the other guy said, nope, he sounds determined. And I am determined.
You certainly sound that way. And the fact that you are going and talking to people the way that you are, I've got to think, if we're going to believe in the America that we were promised in ninth grade civics, I have to believe that that can still count for something.
It has to. Oh, my God, does it have to, Bob? You know, I look at the investment of time that I've made in this campaign, and I look at, you know, the sacrifices that my family has made. And I, you know, go back to the people that I've been talking to as I'm knocking doors or doing community meetings. And people, they stare at you in wonderment. When you tell them, I want to change the world. And Bob, I do, by the way, want to change the world.
Good.
Yeah, that's really what I want to do here. I'm looking to change the world. I'm not looking to, listen, I would love the $168,500 paycheck. I love all the perks that come with the office. I love, of course, the travel expense. I love all that stuff. Hell, who wouldn't, right?
Sure.
But I want to change the world.
Well,
I should clarify, for the better.
Yeah, well, it's kind of funny because you were anticipating somehow. We got something going on here, Tony. You anticipated my next question, and that is obviously you have to run in the 11th congressional district of Michigan.
Yeah.
And I think your first loyalties, you would even admit, have to be to that district. But you swear an oath to the Constitution and the people of the United States. How does that square with your determination to change the world?
Well, you know, listen, one of the greatest lines I ever heard was the title of representative is a job description, not a job title. And you are to represent everybody.
And your check,
an oath of office.
And your check comes from the people of the United States.
Absolutely. It's not like when the 11th district sends their money in, they put a little bit aside for the congressman.
No.
That's everybody's money. I will work for everybody.
Let's talk just for a second about a wage issue, if we may, please.
Sure.
And I've got a different take on the whole minimum wage thing, Tony. It was, what, 1997 when the minimum wage went to $5.15?
Correct.
It will be 10 years before we see it go up again. And the current plan, as it has been as it has been described by both sides, frankly, says that we're going to have a little bit more incrementalism. You know, we're going to give the poor people $6 an hour, and then 3 years later, it'll be 7.25 or 7.5. Am I just completely out of my mind, Tony, or is that just hooey? That's crazy talk. People need help now.
Well, yeah, I mean, a couple things that I would love to see us do. Number one, I would love to see us raise the minimum wage to $7.85 an hour. We just need to do that. I mean, right now, not wait, not incremental. Let's just do it, number one. So that's something that we can easily do, and if the Republicans weren't always looking to give more gifts to their rich friends, we would have done it by now, but they won't play that game. So that's the first thing we need to do. The second thing we need to take a look at is tying the minimum wage to cost of living. We do it for almost every other segment of society. And, Bob, let's be honest about it. Let's say all of a sudden, I was going to say you were making $2 more an hour, but that means you'd be making $2 an hour.
Kind of, yeah.
But, you know, just for the point of this conversation, let's say you were to get a $2 an hour raise next week. Let's say you work 40 hours. That's $80 a week. You back out the taxes. You're probably talking, what, $55, $60 in your pocket at the end of the week, right?
Tops.
What do you think they're doing with that $60? They're buying milk. They're buying gas. They're buying bread. They're buying peanut butter.
Yeah, well, the lower and the middle class, contrary to what we're told by the right wing, Tony, they drive this economy.
Well, you know, the real irony, first of all, if we were to raise the minimum wage, that money would be spent in the local community. So you're right. They do drive the economy. That's number one. But, you know, this is the part that always makes me laugh. More and more, and I shouldn't say laugh because it's very serious, more and more people are now moving into minimum wage jobs because we've seen so many of our good middle class jobs outsourced or just eliminated. And so as you have more and more people moving into a minimum wage job that has made $70,000 a year, and it's happening, at least it's happening where I live.
Delphi?
Yeah. You begin to ask yourself the question, and this is, and for all of you that are listening this evening, go out and ask your Republican friends this question. What if you were him? How would you feel then? And then the important thing, Bob, make them answer.
Yeah, hold their feet to the fire.
Don't let them get away with, well, that's not me. That wasn't my question.
Especially, you know, we're talking about Christian. I mean, these people profess a lot of Christianity, Tony, and it's hard to, I know it's not out of the Bible, but, you know, there but for the grace of God goes John Smith. It could be you. You could be him.
Well, you know, and when I was on the radio, and I've, of course, done this while I'm campaigning, I keep on reminding people, it's not you now. But you know what? That house down the street that was just foreclosed on, a year ago, he didn't think it was him.
And, okay, so it's not you. Are you comfortable with it being your kid?
Well, you know, that's the other thing. You know, we learned last week that for the first time in the history of this country, we are on track for this generation to not do as well as the last generation. For the first time in the history of this country, we actually have more debt than savings.
Right, we have negatives. We have a negative overall savings. Well, for the first time in this country in the last 2 years, we've imported more food than we've produced for ourselves. Now, our friends on the right would say, well, that's because of the success of free trade. No, that's because of the failure of our family farm.
Well, you know, I wish, you know, I wish that free trade worked. I wish that, you know, we held the free trade agreements to the letter of the law. I pray that we find a president that will understand that the reason free trade isn't working, it's because we're the only one playing by the rules.
Right. We can't play on, an unlevel playing field. An American worker with an American standard of living cannot compete with somebody, and I'm not demeaning anyone, Tony, cannot compete with someone who is willing to work for 3 cents an hour. It's mathematical, never mind philosophical, it's mathematically
Yeah, but
impossible.
Bob, what's even sadder than willing to work for 3 cents an hour? How about forced to work for 3 cents
well,
an hour?
Well, sure.
You know,
absolutely.
The whole point of free trade agreements was to do something about humanity. It was supposed to lift people. It was supposed to transition them from this squalor into something. You know, in some countries, $3 an hour is a ton of money.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, I want everybody to do well. And free trade agreements were supposed to do that. It didn't happen. And it's not going to. See, I feel differently about this, Bob, if I saw that we were going to turn a corner or somebody was talking tough on trade or some, you know, but nothing's happening.
No, and it requires real proactivity to make something happen. And even then, because of that unlevel playing field, it's highly unlikely to be successful. You know, NAFTA came in and it was going to change Mexico forever. But, you know, it turns out there are guards at steel mills literally gunning down Mexican workers who are striking for better wages and benefits.
And if we were to apply the letter of the law, they wouldn't have to be doing that.
No, they wouldn't. Well,
so you kind of look at the landscape and you say to yourself, you know, take us back to the very beginning of this discussion. What can I do to change it? And it's incumbent upon me, Bob, with every breath I take, with every minute I'm awake during the day, and as we get deeper into the campaign, there are less and less minutes I'm asleep. But as we continue on this path, as I am on this journey, I pledge to your audience, I pledge to anybody that hears my words, that when I'm elected, when people invest in my campaign, they will get much more back than they ever realized that they could. Because, Bob, I'm going to change the face of politics as we know it.
I believe you will. I, honest to God, Tony, believe that you will. I'm getting great responses from folks listening to this discussion. And like I said, many of them not in Michigan's 11th. How can they help?
They can send money. They can, you know, that's, you know, that's the one thing that we need right now is cash. So if you don't mind, I want to give out some information.
Please do.
The website is www.tonyforcongress2006.com. That's www.tonyforcongress2006.com. And F-O-R or the number 4 both work. They can contribute right there on the front page. They'll see it as they get there. There's an address if they would rather send some money. And again, Bob, I'm going to say it, whether it's $5, whether it's $1,000, it's $100, every bit helps. And again, this is an investment in our future. I didn't do this, Bob. I didn't do this to run in 2008. I did it to win in 2006.
Well, just based on what I'm hearing from you, Tony, I don't think you believe, and I don't believe we've got until 2008.
We don't. We simply don't. And you know what? The progressive community needs to start stepping up and electing people that think the way they do. Not just talk the way they do, think the way they do. I will, listen, as a freshman congressman, I will have very little power. Let's be honest about that.
Yeah.
But no one, and I mean no one, can take my voice away from me. No one can.
And as long as they will let you step behind that podium with that bad microphone, you can have your say. A minute
and
at a time, 2 minutes at a time, but you will call this government to account.
Absolutely. It is time for change. I am that change.
Tony, thank you so much for joining us. This has been a wonderful conversation. I hope it's been as good for you as it has been for me.
Absolutely. I'm hoping you'll have me back before Election Day.
Tony, honest to God, any time that you want to. And the other thing I'm going to do, once this thing goes up on the archives at Ben's, at White Rose Society, I'm going to cut it out, and I'll reduce it to an emailable size. And, I'll email it to you, and if you can make use of it, if you can burn discs of it to let people, you know, because you cannot be everywhere at one time. You know, if you can make this available so that other people can hear where it is you want this nation to go, if that's a help for us.
Absolutely. No, that would be a great help. And, Bob, let me say before we have to leave that I want to thank you for the work you do. I want people to support the work that you do, people like you and Ben Birch and others. Your voice is needed. It's important. It's necessary. And it's time, Bob, for us to just draw that line in the sand and tell people not anymore.
Not in my name, not anymore.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you, Tony. Best of luck. And again, anytime.
Blessings to you.
And you as well. Take care. I feel comfortable saying our good friend, Tony Truppiano. Can you help? I know. There's always a cause. There's always an issue. But I've got chills up and down my spine right now. I hope you do too. However you can help Tony, $1, $5, please do. Please do. We do not have until 2008. We have now. That's it. So thank you in advance for Tony. The show tonight, of course, was produced by my darling, lovely, talented wife, Agnes. It was announced.